舞い上がれよ咲く花びら、捕まえて夢のかけら、君が願う未来理想、春はやってくる。夜明けの下ブランコに乗った不徹の影、空と混ざってゆく勢いつけ、高くなるほどに幸せもほら駆け上がる。ありふれた日々、素直になれないところだけ妙に似てしまった。秘密のままで見上げた空、風よ吹けよ世界を染めようて、輝いて君の笑顔、恐れないでその両手いっぱいに抱えた、宇宙へ舞い上がれ咲く花びら、捕まえて夢のかけら、君が願う
Hello, you're listening to the Otaku Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo!
Today's episode is our first impressions on the spring 2020 anime season. We decided to do it, even though a lot of things are kind of unknown on what shows are actually going to continue on. I know we've gotten about three or four confirmed. There's quite a few listed on Annie Chart, whatever you want to call it, Annie Chart, that are listed as kind of episodes aired all, and it's like they don't even have a date on when the next one's going to air. So I don't know that if that means that they're stopped or if just temporarily held, but just to weigh on the side of, hey, there's a possibility that there's a lot of these shows that will actually finish and we can watch them. I went ahead and decided, let's just go ahead and do our first impressions, and whatever happens, happens.
Yep.
So, yay.
We can only do what we can do.
Like I said, I don't know if it's because they possibly have more completed before the entire ordeal happened, or if they possibly have, you know, some of them are like, yeah, we literally can't, you know, get together on this, or if they're exporting their animation. We've talked about that before. There's some companies that actually do that, but either way, we'll talk about them as we go along. Of course, we won't be talking about BNA, Brand New Animal, because unfortunately that was grabbed by Netflix. Thank you, Netflix, for keeping a show that would be really great right now. we already learned before that ReZero, My Routine Romantic Comedy Snafu's final season, and Sword Art Online, Alicization, War of the Underworld Part 2 were all delayed until the next season, so those are not happening. With that one that we know that's technically been delayed till next season is Unlimited. That one is definitely not going to conclude. And there's several other ones that are, like I said, been announced they're delayed. We'll get to them as we go. So without further ado, let's just jump into them and talk about them. We've pretty much watched four episodes of all these shows, so we have a good idea of a third of their show and what they're kind of panning out to, and that's the whole point of the first impressions, to give our first impressions on them. So the first one we have is The Eighth Son. Are you kidding me? Or Hachi Nante Sore wa nai desho. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes, done by Studio Synergy SP Shinny Animation, and based off of a light novel, and the genres are action and fantasy. And this one follows a, I don't know if they ever mentioned what his name was before, but essentially it's a guy that gets transported to another world, and unlike usual with, I don't even think he died, he just suddenly woke up in the body of a child. A child that is part of a noble family. He is the eighth son of this particular family, and he kind of it's one of those noble families that is technically like head in an area, but they only put on a show. They're actually very, very poor. It starts out he's kind of, you know, in the middle of a dinner and celebrating, I think, a marriage, and yeah. So there's like a bunch of really fancy setup, food, and everything.
His brother was is betrothed
one of the brothers. Yeah. And so, yeah, it looks all fancy. He's like, oh, wow, I'm part of a noble family and everything, and doesn't really quite know what's going on, but he's kind of going along with it just to kind of, I guess, go with the flow. And then the next morning, wakes up, and suddenly they're eating boiled water and not really much to the house. Everything's being taken down, and come to find out the family's really poor. It kicks off from there that he ends up running into a crystal orb that is in the library. And it's funny because the library is full of like the weirdest books. he's not quite sure why the room is filled with weird books, but he comes to find out his dad doesn't even know how to read. But he finds this orb, and the orb is supposed to tell you like your affinity to magic. And of course, like usual, his affinity is really high. And that ends up alerting a nearby man named Alfred, who is a mage. And then later on, his name is Wendelin in the sexual world, or Well, and he runs into this mage in the middle of the forest, and the mage wants him to be his apprentice, so he starts training him. And it kind of goes from there. He learns magic, ends up going into an adventuring guild, just because he doesn't really feel there's a fear that if anybody finds out that he is a mage, they could feel that there might be that he could usurp, you know, the noble family. And so he decides that he wants to just be a venturer and get away from it. And so he joins a school and learns magic and saves the world and gets huge attention and all that kind of stuff because, you know, overpowered another world kind of thing. So your thoughts on the eighth son, are you kidding me?
This one is actually doing decently well. It's not knockout out of the park wonderful, but it is doing really well at what it's trying to do. It's trying not to overplay Well too much, and yet at the same time still keeping him and his powers strong enough that he can overcome obstacles fairly easily. It's obviously trying to play within the realm of how much of a difference, kind of a cultural shock type thing. It's really trying to play off of these weird things that I have to deal with that I'm not really used to, and so therefore, please explain it to me. So it does really well at doing that, and he's obviously building up his little group of friends and everything like that. So it is fun, and it's doing decently well at what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I don't really say it is one of those shows that's really just okay. Like, it is not boring. It's not doing anything that's at all setting itself aside from the rest of the crew. I think one of the more annoying things about the show is that he really quickly forgets that he's in another world. the moment that he gets there and there's that initial shock that he's in that dining room, I don't think he ever mentions anything about anything ever again, being the fact that he's in from another world. He quickly, like literally within a scene change, he's quickly, yeah, he doesn't know that he has eight brothers, and there's some moments of like, well, that's odd that he's asking that question, so let's answer the question for him, because obviously our little brother has obviously lost his mind or something. Let's just answer the question for him. But it never really ever hits on it ever again. So it's really one of those ones where I go, what was the point? Like, why did it have to be an isekai when you literally dropped the isekai aspect within 10 minutes? He never, like I said, he never references it ever again. And so it really does question, what was the point in even bringing that into the picture? It literally, from that scene change, from the very first episode, like the second scene change, it's just a show about a noble son who finds out he has magical powers, gets trained by an apprentice, and then goes off into an adventure school, and then eventually, yeah, becomes like the general or something of, not really, he's not a general or anything, but he's kind of given a medal of, a status of, even though he doesn't have to be a general or something like that.
Technically, the only other scene is the opening scene, because there was an opening scene, and then there was a back to when he was quote unquote born into the world. The first opening scene, he mentions the fact in which he is older, and he mentions the fact that he was a salaryman. But okay, that kind of doesn't really work in the sense of what you're trying to do there.
Yeah, and it kind of opened up. Yeah, they did kind of a jump forward and then a jump back to when he was actually born in that world. And it was later on when he was kind of established, and it looked like he was now kind of trying to build up what I assume is his homeland. Like, I'm assuming that he's going to go back and possibly help them, because he was clearing area for crops and stuff with his magic. And so initially I was really thinking, okay, well, this is probably going to be one of those isekai rebuilding an isekai kind of shows, where he goes to another world and then tries to, I guess, build a nation or build an area and help.
That's what I was kind of hoping for as well.
And then, yeah, like I said, it quickly jumped into, okay, here's the noble families, here's how the noble families work, ship off to the adventure guild, get a party, ship off to killing a skeleton dragon and going and being praised or being blessed by the king. And it's like, okay, nothing, you're not really doing anything special. And I, not that I want another rebuilding an isekai show, but they're usually more, some of the more fascinating ones. So that was kind of what was a little bit disappointing about that kind of shifting away from. Maybe they'll get back to it in the next couple episodes. Who knows? I did appreciate the fact that they did, I guess, throw a lot of sorrow and character to the main character when they kind of get into his apprentice and the apprentice's apprentice. There's a really cool scene with the with Bamtrak, who's the apprentice's apprentice, which I thought was kind of
the master's master.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going backwards. I was like, backwards. Wait.
The apprentice-y? I don't know. The master's master kind of thing was pretty cool. I thought that was kind of a something that didn't, even though I kind of chuckle at it because it's kind of one of those, you haven't really given me enough time to think that you're that much of a person with a heart, but okay, sure, let's see that you actually have a heart and you're not just a stone cold emotionless main character that typically come with these kind of shows. So
I want to be clear, I do have hope for this show. There is some things that are kind of in the last episode or so I've kind of seen hints of that might be interesting, but that's a side tangent. I don't know if they'll actually delve into that, so I'm just, it's one of those I hope, but
yeah, unfortunately it's gonna be one of those shows where it's going to do two different things, or well, technically three different things. Either we get to the 12th episode, we come back and say, look, it didn't do anything special.
Yeah.
Or we're going to come back and say, it did this one really cool thing and it had a solid ending. Or it's going to be, it did this one really cool thing, but the ending sucked or it left too much open. Don't bother with it. So it's unfortunate, but it is one of those shows. Like I said, it's just an okay show. There's nothing that's doing fascinating or bad, so. We'll leave it at that. So yeah, The Eighth Son, Are You Kidding Me? Check that out if you desire. Dropkick on My Devil Dash. Or Jashin Chan Dropkick Dash, I think is the Japanese one as well. But I think it's just a character thing. Anyways, this one is streaming on Crunchyroll. They already posted all 11 episodes. We've been kind of watching it as we go through the season. I didn't really want to sit there and binge the entire thing. Rather, I was kind of trying to keep to watching it as we go along. Being done by Studio Nomad, the source is a web manga, and the genres are comedy and supernatural. And of course, for those who don't know, this is following Yurine, who summons a demon from the underworld called Jashin. And Jashin is really quickly realizes that the only way that she can get back home is if she kills, if the person that summons her passes away. So she obviously wants to kill her, and she fails miserably because Yurine is kind of OP.
She has a lot more OP than she lets on.
Like, I'm not that she has like super magical powers or anything. She just turns and just, you know, slices her up with a machete or something like that. It's very thinking of the Batgirl,
Dokuro-chan.
Dokuro-chan. It's very violent comedy type show. So if you like Dokuro-chan, or if you like the show, you should check out Dokuro-chan. But this one is. And I know that I had problems with the first season being kind of very hit and miss.
Yeah.
This season, I think, has been more miss than hit.
I'm going to agree with you on that one.
It feels like, and like I said, it felt like it was starting to dry up. Like, we've given up all the jokes and we're kind of losing it. But I'm still sticking with it just because I enjoy the characters. But I do have to say, and it's unfortunate that we don't really nothing much to say about the show. Good job on Nomad for releasing it all at once, because they kind of dodged the bullet with the COVID thing. So props to them for that one. But at the same time, it is one that I'm enjoying doing episode by episode, because it's kind of been a little stale lately. And I'm hoping that it kind of starts kicking up. Because like I said, I think the first season was the same way. I think the first season I was kind of iffy on it, and then it started picking up at some point.
So. I think the frustrating thing is that it's dwelling on characters that are I'll be honest. It's mostly Josh and Jen, and I think that was really my biggest.
Well, yeah, because I think in the first season, Josh was
And so it's kind of leaning more heavily on her this season. It feels like, and so it's not hitting as well. But yeah, it's not a bad show. It's just it is what it is. It's trying to it's goofy here and there, and they're just a bunch of silly, lovable goofballs. Is really all it is.
Characters from the underworld. Yes. So yeah, if you like characters from the underworld, all living in the human world, doing crazy stuff, check it out. But like I said, it's been a pretty dry season so far. We'll see if it picks up. But I do agree with you. I think that was the thing with the first season is that technically Jashin wasn't the funniest character, and that seems to be the focus again suddenly out of nowhere. So we'll see if it can pull itself out of the rut. I think the two Ice Queens was one of the funnier parts, and I remember enjoying a lot of Medusa stuff and Minos. So, and they've been all technically not really existing so far, so we'll see. Dropkick Bottom of Devil Dash. Check that out if you're looking for a show that actually you can watch all the way through. Sugu Sugu Momo. This is the second season of Sugu Momo. This one is running on Crunchyroll. Don't know how long it's going to be running for. Done by Studio 0G. The sources of manga and the genres are action, comedy, supernatural, ecchi, school, and seinen. And this one follows a guy named Kazuya. And I totally not remember the name of the things that they are. They're basically objects that can become spirits if they are kind of held for so long and taken care of for so long, you know, family pieces and stuff like that. And Kazuya has a cloth that she was given for he was given to him by his mother, and that cloth can become a actual spirit, and it's called Kiriha. And Kiriha was actually, I guess, apparently owned by his mother as well. And using Kiriha, he can actually wield her as a weapon and fight against bad spirit things, which are technically all the same kind of thing. He goes to school. That school has a lot of people that end up running into these type of spiritual items. And those spiritual items then can change things. They can do special abilities. And so he has to team up with Kiriha and defeat them. And it was kind of cool because at the end of the last season, they kind of got into the aspect that he was actually drawing these things into existence. So he kind of feels a sense of a guilt that he is causing problems for people. I mean, one of the big stories they had in the previous one is they had somebody that was affected by it, and then she ended up losing her voice because they defeated it incorrectly. Each one of these kind of things has to, the person that owns them has to kind of, I guess, repent for them, and then they have to defeat it. Otherwise, it will cause a negative effect to the person themselves. So it was kind of cool they actually added some element to it that gives some weight to the situation. But it's kind of, with this season, it's kind of getting a club together. That club is kind of working together in order to find and defeat these things in the proper way. And at the same time, like I said, there's this kind of aura of issues that Kazuya is causing just because he's drawing these in to the area. So thoughts so far?
Yeah, this is going to sound kind of silly, but the only real downside to this season on this one is that it's not as ecchi as last season. One of the weird charms to this show was its no holds barred when it comes to the ecchi, and it's a goofy, fun show, and They have a solid story in the background that is actually keeping everything moving and going along with what they're doing. But a lot of the humor was stuck in its ecchi, goofy moments. The strange thing is in the second season, it's trying a lot more harder to do the story and losing a lot of its ecchi edge. Is that a bad thing? Probably not. Hopefully it can pull its story together. The story is decent, but it's not strong enough to keep the edge off of the boredom. And that's I think the problem is when you're getting along with its story, you're losing a lot of its charm that keeps it kind of fun and light and humorous while it's trying to go along on its story. And the story is there, and it's a solid story, but it's not solid enough to keep the boredom away as far as the entertainment factor.
Tsukumogami are what they called. Like I said, those are basically the objects become possessed by a spirit. I don't know what you're talking about. They literally had a close as you can get to sex scene between Kazuya and Tsuno.
That's true.
That did was have a hilarious scene.
And they,
by the way,
they did have a gender swap, and Kazuya's panties got showed.
It was a good gender swap episode.
It was a good.
We were just talking about this with Arya, and it was like, wow, they don't really have good gender swap.
Yeah, they
episodes.
Don't do that was a anymore. It was that was a wow. They're actually doing a gender swap in a modern show. That was a.
Now, the only unfortunate thing with this gender swap episode, it happened, and then they just got right into the action. So you didn't really have much time for them to really kind of joke with each other about it the after credits. Because it was funny, because I immediately go, of course Shiro gets the big-chested character gender swap. Of course, because that's all he really cares about. But it was
two
it
guys
was
are episode. The two guys that are gender swapped. Go ahead and do a favor for each other.
But no, I can't say that it is any different than the first season with the etchy element, because technically with the first season, it was like every single episode opened up with Kazuya and him waking up in the morning, and suddenly he realized that Kiriha is there, and Kiriha is like, yeah, not even shying away from the idea of, oh, well, let's grab this thing, and then it would freak out, and it would swap the scenes. But no, I think that it has a kind of equal amount. I've actually been enjoying this season a lot. It's funny, because it is one of those shows that you think, and I think I said the same thing with the first season, it's a show that you would think would have, like, really poor action scenes, but the action scenes are actually really good with this show. The stories so far have been pretty solid as well. Like I said, it was fun watching Tsuno try to get him to kind of act as if they're going to get married together, and then watching the mom, them trying to fake it to the mom, and that whole scene in the bedroom was fantastic. I enjoyed the one with Momo and the other girl, I forget what her name was. Mana and Mitsuri with their whole, track running and the cursed shoes. They had a pretty cool little twist to it that I wasn't really expecting. So they've been solid episodes so far. It's one of those things where Tsukumomo is a show that should be pretty crap. And I think I was surprised this first season as well. I'm like, yeah, this will be etchy, stupid stuff. And it always ends up being actually a really entertaining show. So if you're okay with the etchy and you want a solid little kind of action / comedy show, it does a good job of it. And I think the second season has been pretty solid so far. Enjoy the teacher's episode. That was really good as well. So, well, that was the gender swap episode, technically. So, yeah, it's been good so far. Definitely looking forward to more. Tsukumomo. Next one is my next life as a villainess, all routes lead to doom. Or Otome game, no Hametsu flag, Shika nai Akuyaku Reijo ni Tensei Shite Shimata. Oh my gosh, Shimata. Shite Shimata. Streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes, done by Studio Silverlink. The source is a light novel, and the genres are comedy, drama, fantasy, romance, and school. And this is another isekai show. This girl ends up waking up as a younger Catalina. And she quickly realizes who she has become. She has become the villain of a Otome game that she used to play when she was actually in the human world. The regular, back in her previous life, she played Otome games. And she remembers a specific character that she had become, which is the villain. And as the title kind of leads you to believe, she realizes that, wow, yeah, I play that game, and in every single route that you choose in that game, it doesn't end very well with Catalina. She always ends up dead or exiled or something, stabbed by her fiancé, exiled, like I said, or many different ways that she could die. And so she quickly kind of realizes, I need to kind of get myself positioned, trained, or something, so that when it comes time that I'm an adult, when I go to this certain magic school where this Otome game starts, that I'm prepared to kind of fend off any death flag, so to speak. So thus begins her her adventures.
At least she didn't shy away from going to the Magic Academy.
Or go to that would be my choice. I just wouldn't go to the Magic Academy. This seems like a good option to me. Well, she seems to be doing all right so far, which is kind of going to be my first negative to really speak of. But go ahead. What's your thoughts?
I actually really love this show. I love the way it's setting itself up. It's kind of one of those kind of goofing off. I love having little chats with Andrew talking about how this could we do this or could we do that? The first three episodes have been her setting up how she is going to kind of like a backstory to the Otome game is really kind of what the first three episodes have been. And then, so we only have just seen the first glimpses of her actually in the Otome game. And so it's been kind of fun goofing off and talking about, well, what do you think that they're planning on doing with this character, and how are they planning on, what do you think that they're going, the ultimate end goal of how they're going to play this whole thing out. So it's been a lot of fun doing that. The show itself, the characters absolutely, at first they were absolutely cute and adorable. Now we see them as grown up ish. So yeah, they've got more elegant feel to a lot of the characters. So it's been a lot of fun watching the show, and I'm so enjoying it.
Yeah, it's funny because when it first kind of starts out being it's the backstory of Catalina before the Otome game, essentially, which I don't know if the Otome game would have that backstory, so much of a backstory of a character, but essentially that's what we're getting is the backstory of the villain character. And yeah, it is one of those fun ones where I think a lot of our enjoyment comes out of us kind of speculating what they could do with it, because it's one of those shows that it could do some really interesting things. Now, technically, this is my first kind of negative, unfortunately, is it never really has done anything. It hasn't done anything that has surprised me. It's fun. It is very cute. For the first three episodes, it's cute because they're all younger characters, and she's constantly just trying to make friends and undo what she thinks is the more bigger issues with the person's backstory. So she goes, oh yeah, this person right here is this character when they're before the game. And I remember in the backstory of that character, they felt isolated. So I'm going to make sure that character doesn't feel isolated. So she just kind of dotes all over them to make them realize they're wanted. And that's kind of the cute thing about it, is like, oh, okay, she just kind of undid the issues that Keith had. And that's really cute. Oh, there was an issue where it could have continued to be that way, and she undid it. So there is fun aspects of that, and it's really cute in the first three episodes because of that. It's kind of just her making friends with everybody that should be her possible enemies in the future. The issue is that it kind of has undone everything that should be a difficulty for her. Like, she's technically conquered everything. And so by the time the Otome game actually starts, it's like, okay, well then, what's going to be the issue? And that's really where we have our fun with, is like, oh, well, what if the main character of the Otome game turns into the villain? And it kind of seems like it's just turning into her overthinking everything, and I'm wondering if that would have possibly been a thing, but it hasn't really done that. So it is a big, huge question mark at this point, where it's like, the titles that she has all these death flags, and there really isn't any threat, really. It is, other than the fact that every now and then it goes, oh, by the way, this character is from the game, and this is that character's backstory in the game, and, oh, I just realized I just did this scene this way. But other than that, it's not really referencing the Otome game much. I kind of noted that Chris, one of the episodes, I'm like, they haven't even really mentioned the game at this point. And then suddenly, like, at the very end of the episode, it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, that was that character. And it's like, well, okay, I was really expecting it to be more... like if her flag breaks or something like that, that kind of show where constantly they're going, oh, well, here's the option and this one leads to death, and so I need to make sure that I'd fix it this way, and then possibly her doing that causes another flag or something like that. It hasn't really played the title very well, and that's my only real issue. Now, technically, it could do something really cool, and like I said, like we've mentioned already, we enjoy talking about the possibilities, but so far it really hasn't played on its only unique aspect very much.
Well, to give you an idea, in the first three episodes were effectively her backstory, which mm-hmm. she effectively set up all four of the kind of games romance options or love interests, she set them all up to have some kind of a bond with her. So like Andrew was saying, so that the ultimate doom flag is not as apt to come upon her.
Unless now, one of my theories is correct, that they all start killing each other or they one of them turns yandere.
Yeah, that was mine. Okay, what if they went Yuri on this whole thing?
That was my thing. I was like, I think in the first time he watched the intro, I'm like, oh, well, Yuri's an option. Just become the choice for Maria.
There you go. And that's what I was my ultimate thing is, it really does seem like that's the direction that they're pushing it. Is that Katarina is just going to eventually win over Maria.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is that in the process of the last episode, I think they did three kind of references to the Otome game. And what they usually do is, okay, one of the characters, one of the love interests will pop up and say, oh, hey, I met Maria the other day. And she's like, and she starts freaking out about it. And then they point at the Otome game. And like Andrew was saying, usually it's her overthinking it, and that's kind of what that's where it feels like.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that they were all going to think, oh, well, Catalina really hates this girl because she's freaking out that I talked to her. I better not talk to her anymore, and then suddenly it turns into a doom flag right there or something.
it's pointing at the game, but it's not where I do agree with Andrew is it's not a heavy emphasis thing. And that I kind of like. It does feel like it's just her overthinking just normal interpersonal interactions. And that's kind of the fun thing is kind of all making it into one big old Otome game, which it's not really. It's real life, and she just can't let this one thing go, which is a good thing because she's actually a lot more sweeter than this supposed villain. So
until she goes nuts, goes crazy and psycho, and then turns really dark. Yep, that's my next life as a villainess, all about Slee the Doom. We'll see where it goes from here. It's been fun, though. Sing Yesterday for Me, or Yesterday Wo Utate. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 18 episodes. I didn't know that until recently. being done by Studio Dogokubo. The source is a manga, and the genres are slice of life, drama, romance, and seinen, which leads me to believe this might be one of those shows where I think it's going to do, like, 4 episodes, or maybe 5 episodes, and then just wait until the next season. Being 18 episodes. We'll see. This one is, it follows a guy named Rikuo, and Rikuo is kind of fresh out of college, just working at a convenience store, kind of has a feeling that he's not really doing much with his life, feeling like he's kind of a loser, but he doesn't really want to commit to anything. At some point, he runs into Haru, who is a girl that runs around with a crow on her shoulder, as a pet crow, and for some reason, this Haru girl has a lot of interest in him. Kind of find out that they had kind of a meeting at some point when he was younger, and she kind of has been, I guess, locked onto him as kind of a love at first sight that she kind of had for him. And then later on, we have a run in with a kind of a friend that Rikuo had when he was in college, which her name was Shinako, and she is currently teaching in the area. So they meet up together and go out to eat, and he kind of realized that, you know, he's always kind of loved her, and so he kind of confesses his love to her, and it doesn't quite turn out that great. Kind of find out that she has some issues from her past that is causing her not to want to kind of give up on love, so to speak. So you have kind of a love triangle being created between Haru, who ends up turning out to be the student of Shinako, and Rikuo, who is this guy that doesn't really feel like he's doing much of his life, but doesn't want to keep that, you know, holding him back. So
introduction love quad in the last episode.
Yep, pretty much. There will be much heartbreak.
Are you thoughts? Going first or am I? Oh, this show. I do like its feel. It looks gorgeous. Throw that out there. Love the feel of the show. It's very, very chill and just telling the story as it goes. The frustration I have is I don't feel like I can give it a fair shake at this moment, mostly because I don't. A lot of the it's just setting up everything, and it doesn't feel like anything has truly happened yet outside of just the Shinako. Setup.
They've been doing a lot of build on Shinako.
Yeah, a lot of build on Shinako. And that's really all it has really happened at the moment, because it's just so methodical and very well paced. And I have a lot of hope for it. I'm waiting for that one moment where I can go, yes, it just got me in the Doki Dokis and I've just went nuts. And at the moment, it's just methodically setting up everything to where everything is going to either blow up, or which I fully expect that everything's going to blow up and everybody's going to be crying and everybody's going to be screaming at each other. And it's just going to be one hate fest fueled rant at everybody.
Yeah, I think it is very well paced. Like I almost want to say it's, when you were kind of mentioning the idea that it's really hard to kind of give it a clear perspective on it just because we haven't watched too much of it. And it's moving. I was going to say it's because it moves kind of slow, but a lot has happened in the show. It's done a lot of introduction with characters, bringing even characters I didn't really initially think he was going to be much to him. But Ruo, who is kind of the brother of somebody that Shinako had fell in love with at some point. And that was kind of a crux for really diving into Shinako a lot, which I thought was really, really great, because it kind of opens up with Rikuo, the spontaneous anime-ish kind of girl that just pops out of nowhere, and she's really weird and kooky, and then suddenly out of nowhere, there's a teacher girl, and Rikuo really likes her, but then it like really dives into her character and why she's saying what she says, and it really feels very grounded. I think that's really the solid thing about the show, is that every one of the characters feels very real, it feels very adult, and it's telling a very kind of not bombastic or crazy melodramatic show. It's a drama show from Japan that doesn't feel melodramatic, and that's it's refreshing sometimes, because it's sometimes with these types of stories where it's talking about romance and adulthood, they always manage to get in that melodramatic realm. And I think it's been very grounded, very solid, very believable story about a guy who feels like he has nothing and trying to, you know, finally step forward in that path that he wants to step forward. And I kind of feel like there's a lot of possibility for Rikuo as a main character, just because it does feel like, and he kind of admits it himself, that he's in a kind of stuck, and he finally takes his first step forward and he completely falls on his face, which really sucks. But I am kind of intrigued to see where he kind of moves forward. If it's Haru that helps him kind of move forward, or is it Shinako who finally turns around after kind of giving up on love for so long? It's been a great story so far, and I am really looking forward to more. Yeah, Dogokobo is doing an excellent job on it. They usually typically do very well animated moe shows, and this is their kind of, there's a couple other cases, but this is one of the few times that they've actually done like a full on drama show that's very adult, and they're doing a fantastic job of it already. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I kind of mentioned the idea that I believe the manga is completed, so this will, hopefully the 18 episodes will be the complete story. I think it's only like 11 volumes, but I'm looking forward to hopefully being a complete story and a very solid one. So very well paced, greatly directed, great character so far. Doesn't feel melodramatic. It's checking all the marks for me so far. So
Haru's best girl.
Hopefully it doesn't get delayed, but at the same time, I want Dogokobo people to be safe. I don't want the studio to be in danger. So take care of themselves, and we'll see.
Shinako sucks.
I have no problem with either one of them. So, Singing Yesterday for me. Check that one out if you're looking for a solid drama. Moving on, we have Princess Connect Redive. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll. Don't know how long it's going for. Being done by Studio Cygame Pictures. The source is a mobile game. The genres are action, adventure, fantasy. The director is Takaomi Kanasaki, who did Konosuba and Tokyo Ravens, which explains a lot. Of course, the creators is of the actual property is Cygames, who did Rage of Bahamut and Grand Blue Fantasy. And this one technically follows a girl named Kokoro, who goes out in the middle of nowhere where she's supposed to meet her master. She was kind of told that she was going to meet this guy and should serve him, and that he would be doing great things. And this guy appears out of nowhere, who she calls him Yuki. And he has no memory of his past self, doesn't really know why he's there, can't really speak at all because he's lost all of his memories. And so she's taking care of him as they try to just survive. it's really no epic intro to this. She literally finds him. Some dogs, some wolves try to drag him off every 2 seconds. They have like the most cracked out eyeballs ever. And she keeps trying to save him. And then eventually this girl named Pecorin shows up. She's chasing after some guys who she thinks one of them needs medicine really badly, but they're actually thieves who stole her weapon. But she's desperately trying to find them to help them. And then later on, they find a girl named Carol, who is a mage Neko girl who really badly wants to kill Pecorin. We see some kind of quick flashes of her being told by her.
Was it to kill her or embarrass her? I don't remember.
She was initially to kill her, and now she's supposed to be just watching her because she's obviously a princess or something, so... And then they eventually make a guild together, and that guild is focused on finding the best ingredients and cooking great meals. But they cook one thing. That's true. She did cook stuff at a bar. I keep fearing this show's going to turn into a food porn show. It hasn't yet, so I'm happy.
The only food porn that they've done so far is bugs.
Bugs. Yes, bugs. So, yeah. Your thoughts?
Show when you describe what has happened in the last four episodes, it does sound absolutely goofy, and that is about the only thing that you can say about this show. Is it's just so stinking goofy. They have
money important.
The money is important. The cracked out dogs was absolutely goofy, and
I love the wolves.
The wolves were so funny, we couldn't stop laughing at these stupid wolves and Kokoro running around trying to chase after the wolves.
And then like later on, it would be out of nowhere. He would have Kokoro and she's cooking something at a campfire, and then she looks over and Yuki's gone, and suddenly you see the wolves dragging him away, and she's like, and she'd get that little X mouth thing and freak out. And she's so adorable. Kokoro is so adorable.
Kokoro is
she's
awesome.
Like the Mashu of this show.
It's so hard to choose between her and Carol. But
Carol's
right now,
kind of loud.
Right now, but she's toned down a little bit.
But
that's why I like Kokoro so much. I love Kokoro in general. But Carol has got this kind of tsundere-ish thing going on that's just kind of charming. But at the same time, she hasn't been there long enough to actually take over. And then we got this goofy...
Pecorin's just like a total airhead.
We got a random... What was she? She was she was one of those spitting things, the llamas or something like that. They just randomly brought in, and it was like... She's talking about how cute she is, and then she turns her head over to the side and spits. And it's like, okay, that was just left field. And then she randomly magical girls into a cute girl. And it was like, okay, that okay,
gotcha,
there we go.
Gotcha character.
So this is just a goofy, crazy show. And it's more funny talking about it than actually, I mean, it was funny watching the show, but it is even more funny trying to describe this show. So yeah.
The best way that I can describe it, it's Konosuba-esque. Like I really got Konosuba vibes when I started watching the show, just even how they cut the shots. Like I said, it's totally makes sense. Cause I think we did mention the fact that the director was from Konosuba. And it really does now make total sense now that I see that again in our list, because it has the same type of shots, the same cuts for scenes, like having him being dragged away and then cutting a scene. It all feels very Konosuba in how it's kind of portrayed. And it's excellent in the way they're portraying it. It is absolutely funny. Like I said, it gives me... It's finally I can watch more Konosuba, but it's not technically Konosuba characters. They've been doing a lot of funny stuff with Yuki and his character being... I almost thought he was going to end up being I thought he was going to be completely mute for the entire show, and then suddenly I know where he starts saying like a word or two, and I'm like, okay, so he's just trying to find words or learn words again. But it was... there was this one point where he's in the middle of this kind of courtyard area or the center point of the town, and it first cuts to this lady, and she's like completely unique looking. She's like obviously another gacha character. And she's like, looks like she's dying. And then she falls over on the ground. And then Yuki walks over and sees it, and you're thinking, okay, he's going to go over and say, are you okay? Can I get you help? Let's get you some medical attention. No, he comes over and says, he puts food down and says, hungry? And then walks away, and then it cuts to her face, and she looked completely pissed, like, I'm going to kill you look on her face. It was just hilarious, because he's just like, hungry? Here you go. Just walks away. Doesn't even want to give her medical attention or anything. It's really fun. It's handling the comedy excellently. It's a super huge surprise that this is based off a mobile game, because, yeah, technically, you can't say that every single mobile game out there is going to have terrible story. Fate Go has fantastic story beats. But making it into a show and making it really funny and have just the right pacing for the comedy, it's doing an excellent job of it so far. And I'm actually really surprised how well it's animated. It's got some crazy action scenes, really well animated. So they're doing an excellent job in the animation. Side Games is obviously not going to cut corners with their own property. So good kudos to them for doing an excellent job of animating their characters and really kind of selling the mobile game. Because it is one of those ones where it's like, kind of makes me want the mobile game. Of course, I kind of wanted the mobile game to begin with because it had a ReZero collab at some point. I was hoping maybe here soon we could have, you know, Rem and all them make cameos in the show.
And the stupid thing is, I don't see Side Games bringing this over. They apparently got so burned with Rage of the Bahamut. They
haven't even brought Granblue over, even though you can play Granblue from anywhere through a browser. But yeah, I think
Rage of the Bahamut burned them way too much, and they're ticked, and they're not coming back. That hurts.
But yeah, a lot of fun, really hilarious, a lot of great laughs in there. So if you're looking for a solid comedy this season, which I'm sure plenty of people need that right now, check out Princess Reconnect Redive. Don't overlook it. I kind of had a feeling of overlooking it just because it was based off a mobile game, but it has definitely not let me down so far. I like that Wolf has a listing in Anime Planet. Mm-hmm. So you can see his cracked out eyes again. All right, moving on to Sentence of a Bookworm, Season 2. Or Honzuki no Kikokujo Shisho ni naru tame ni wa shudan wo irandere masen 2. This one's being streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes, being dubbed by Studio Aijido, and source is light novel, genres are fantasy, slice of life. And, I guess slight spoilers for those. I really do recommend everybody go just watch season one already. It's a really fantastic show. I think it was our first, our number one of the year last year.
I don't remember. Seems like it.
No, I think Carol on Tuesday knocked it down. I don't remember. It was either one or two of our favorite of the year. Easily our favorite of that season. But yeah, go watch it. But anyways, there's a character that is as a person that has been an isekai to another world. She is put into the body of a girl named Mine. And this girl named Mine seems very fragile. We kind of assume that she probably possibly was dying the moment that she took over Mine's body. But this very frail girl, and she kind of she's in a family that is very poor. They're part of a commoner family. This world has nobles, and she kind of is using her knowledge from the previous world to actually make money, produce things, makes a studio, and gets into the trading guilds in order to make some money for her family. And at some point, this is kind of all technically for the sake of finding books, because in her previous life, she was a bookworm, and she just wants books, and there's no books available to anybody that is a commoner. And so she eventually finds out that the nearby church, the church has books, and so she decides to join the church in order to get the books, and then she wants to become a noble so that she could be able to read the books. Everything is for the books, but it all kind of underlines a story about kind of the world that she's in, the people around her, the effects that she has on things, and the effects of an ailment that she has, and how it affects her, how to overcome that ailment. And it's kind of continuing on with the kind of the same pacing into the second season. I've actually been really enjoying it. I'm running right into it. Your thoughts so far of this new adventure?
I've really been enjoying it.
I just grew right into it.
No, I have been just thoroughly enjoying the show. I mean, continuing on, I now feel a little bit more comfortable with how they chapter ended the last one and going into this, because this one is really it feels very different because it's not as much about what her life was in the commoner section. Now it's her life as a acolyte. What did they call her? A priestess. Her life as a priestess is very, very different than her life as a commoner. And so now we're going into that and how she's dealing with the separations, with, the commoners and the nobles, and how she needs to be a noble and how she needs to treat her vassals and everything like that, and earning their trust and everything like that. It's just been an absolute, we're not even talking. We do occasionally hit on her, side gig now. It's now technically a side gig over there that she does here and there, but how the side gig is actually now, contributing to her life as, a priestess and everything like that. So it's been very interesting to see how they're shifting things. The new things that she's learning about the church, and how she's solving those problems. There's lots of cool stuff that I really, really love in the show, and I can't suggest it enough still.
Yeah, I think that's my only real kind of very light. It's kind of like a frustration, but it's a frustration that's never really bothers me just because I end up enjoying where the story's going anyways. But I almost feel like it's completely changed its storytelling, because where before it was a lot about her, you know, building up a trade, basically trade, building up a studio, fighting her illness. And then suddenly out of nowhere, it's like, it's very little about trade. There's the illness has kind of taken a huge back seat. It's about, you know, yeah, the vassals and the fights between common and the commoners and the nobles and church life. And it's like, it's completely changed. It's like a huge shift. It's like she went through a door and suddenly she's in a completely different world. And so there is like a frustration there, because the formula that I had before that I really loved has kind of been shifted, but I really do trust the writer and that whatever she's shifting into is something that's going to do something fantastic. And so far it's been doing excellent at that. So I don't have it as an issue, because even though things have completely changed for the storytelling, it's still doing really cool things. So I'm excited every time an episode comes up. I cannot wait to watch it. It's just been a fantastic story so far. So hopefully we'll get another, you know, extra three or so episodes like we did last time with the second season. But yeah, it's a great story. Really enjoyed the first season. Absolutely loving the second season as well. So cannot say enough, recommend enough. So yeah, Then is a Bookworm. Check that out. Tower of God, or Kame no To. This one's streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 13 episodes, being done by Studio Telecom Animation Film. The source is a web manga. The genres are action, adventure, drama, fantasy, mystery. The music's being done by Kevin Pinkin, who did Made in Abyss, Shield Hero, Under the Dog, Nor 9. Character designs by Kudo Masashi, who did Bleach and Mao. And this one follows a guy named Bam. And I don't think it's really technically Bam, because I don't really ever hear them say Bam, but he's listed as Bam. And Bam is, he's basically at the very beginning tracing a girl named Rachel into what they call this Tower of God. And it's got this kind of setup. This is going to be very difficult to explain, because I really have zero clue what the hell's going on. He enters this tower, and it seems to be some kind of trial thing where people go from floor to floor through all these trials in order to reach the top to, I think, to get a wish or something like that. But he's only going there because his friend Rachel went into there, because she has a dream that she really wants, a wish that she really wants fulfilled. And so she runs off there before him. He ends up going as well. And his only desire is to go up all these floors so that he could eventually get to Rachel again. right off the bat, he's given pretty much an impossible trial, but then some random girl shows up out of a warp pole thing. I don't know where she came from. She gives him one of her swords, which is apparently a very powerful weapon of many. There's like, I think, 13 of them, I think they said.
Yes.
They're very powerful weapons, and she's not supposed to give it to him, but she does anyways. And he uses that sword and completely wins the trial and essentially is welcomed by this thing of the building. The Black Marsh thing shows up and likes him.
I thought Black Marsh was his sword.
She showed up and said she liked him. So yeah, I guess the sword liked him. I don't know what the hell's going on. Then he goes into the next trial where they're out in a big old field, and it's the whole thing is to survive, but everybody starts killing each other. And then at the very end, it says, okay, stop fighting and then make a party of three before this time ends, otherwise you'll lose. And so he teams up with this guy named Aguro and a big giant lizard guy that wants to kill him really badly named Rock. And then they go off in the next trial, and the next trial, the next trial, the next trial. The next trial. So far, it's really just been going through trials, kind of people grouping up, some little prodding here and there about backstories. I think they did quite a bit on Aguro's backstory and why he doesn't trust people and this big kind of backstabbing that happened in his earlier days. And then a little bit of hint behind Anak and her, I guess, where she's from and the weapon that she has, and again, connection to Bomb's weapon. Really all that's kind of come from it so far. Go ahead. I'll wait.
This is a show that I absolutely love to hate. In one hand, six points of I despise this show, and on the other hand, there's 6 points of reasons why I love this show. It looks great. The characters are absolutely crazy, just awesome. The weapons are cool. The setting is cool. And then, but I find it boring as all crap. I don't like the trials. I don't like the system. Nothing seems to be making much. Like Andrew was saying, it's trying to keep track of what's going on. Doesn't make a lot of sense. Bomb is this amnesiac character who randomly woke up, and he's absolutely obsessed with this girl who's been tainted now, and so. And I'm sure he's going to think that she's the greatest thing ever anyway. And I just keep watching and hoping that eventually this is all going to make sense and it's going to be a great show. But as it stands right now, I love it and I hate it.
It was funny. The first episode, I was like, I have no clue what the hell is going on. From the beginning to the end, I was like, this is going at like breakneck speed, and I have no clue what the hell is going on. I don't even have like a foundation to build off of. And I think that was the problem, is it like it throws you right into there, and it's like, which is a good thing because it gets right into the intenseness of like, oh, now he's got a trial and he could possibly die. No, he shouldn't do this trial because he's going to die. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know, like, where was behind them? Are they? And I guess that's part of the whole mystery, is that, is there a world? Are they just all inside this one tower and they're all climbing? Was there no location that they came from? Where did they live before now? Was everybody together somewhere? There's a lot of mystery to technically what is surrounding them? Where are they even at?
Kind of a Mortal Kombat concept. Where it, Mortal Kombat, it was a bunch of characters from just random systems. And that's exactly kind of what they're doing here, is you've got characters from all kinds of different worlds that all brought together in this one.
But they all seem to know what Anak said when she said that, I'm from this. So they knew what she was from. Only one knew that. I think she said something about that she's a liar or a fraud. So it seems like they know what they're. Nobody's shocked by a big lizard man showing up out of nowhere with a spear. They all seem to kind of understand that they are all species of some location. So I guess that's, again, we don't really know if they're all going to be from different locations or all from the same location. But my difficulty is that I don't really know what's going on. I don't really have any care for any of the characters. And I think that's the other issue with kind of that breakneck speed is that I don't really care who dies. Like, yeah. if suddenly out of nowhere Hots gets chopped up, I'm not going to care. Shibisu is annoying as hell. If she died, I'd probably just cheer. I don't really have... Bomb has is completely unlikable. He's just a blank thing. They've kind of made some effort to kind of humanize Agoro as a character, and I think that's probably the only character we really kind of got any depth of. So that's the difficulty, is it's like it's a battle royale where I don't really care who wins. It's just... I just want to kind of know what the hell's going on, and that's my issue, really. It's not technically doing anything wrong, other than the fact that, like I said, I'm confused what's going on, and the setup, I think, was not really well done. But it as a battle thing is fine. It's good animation to it. I don't particularly care for the style. Unlike Chris, I don't really like it. I think the style is kind of flat and not very anime-ish, I guess. It doesn't look like an anime, but it's fine. Not that I think it looks bad or anything like that. It's just... I'm struggling more with the world and what the hell's going on and not really caring about any of the characters. That's my difficulty. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see if it gets any better. But at this point, it's been pretty there existing, I guess. Any other thoughts?
No.
Tower God. Moving on. Glepner. This one's streaming on Funimation. Very big surprise, seeing how last season didn't work out very well with inappropriate shows, but it's on Funimation, and it seems to be existing still, so it obviously hasn't crossed the line too far. Being done by Studio Pine Jam, the source is a manga, and the genres are action, mystery, supernatural, ecchi, and seinen. And I thought that there was a comedy in there somewhere. I swear I put comedy in the last one, because it's not a comedy. The director is Kazuhiro Yoneda, who did Yone of the Dawn and Cool-Headed Hozuki. This one follows a guy named Shuichi. And it comes to find out that Shuichi has this kind of secret. He can turn into a gigantic mascot character, dog thingy-majiggy. And he's kind of keeping it a secret from everybody. But at some point, he notices there is a fire in some location. There was a lady inside there. And so he transforms and saves the girl from inside the burning, random, abandoned building. And then tries to do something inappropriate to her because his beast-like senses was kind of giving him desires to do that. And then he ran away. But this girl that he left behind notices that he left his cell phone behind and then finds out that it's him. And so she now knows his secret, and she is kind of forcing him or blackmailing him into helping her find these coins, because a while back her parents were killed by her sister, and she is trying to find these coins that are somehow linked to it because her sister turned into some weird beast creature thing too. So, yeah. It seems like it's pretty much a lot of people with beast-like powers all fighting and searching for these coins. And these coins, you can bring them to this kind of vending machine where this alien person thing is there that will kind of grant them something in exchange for the coins. So, yeah, that seems to be just so far. Thoughts?
This one is actually kind of my, I'm not going to say surprise. It's a show that I'm actually enjoying a lot more than I thought I would. Like we had mentioned before, it really felt like it was going to be a dark show, and it's not as dark as I thought it was going to be. It's not.
Somebody got their stomach completely blown out by a big gigantic pistol. But I don't know.
Well, okay, I was flat out expecting, you know, blood and gore every 5 minutes when we got into the show, and it really hasn't really done that. It's been. It's got a really weird twist to it. I mean, the kind of idea of the everybody becoming some kind of a weird monster thing, and then this particular pair is just the fact that he became a monster that just so happens to have the ability to pair up. And so it's a very interesting concept in general, but it hasn't done anything spectacular, and it's still holding this very a dark undertone, but it hasn't been as dark as I was expecting it to be.
Well, it kind of gives off these little hints that, and it's sad because at some point it does feel like it jumps, because in the earlier segments of it, Shuichi is very passive and Claire is very aggressive. And so with this whole dynamic where she can technically zip open the back of him and wear him like a mascot suit, and she can force his hand, so to speak. And it gets in this whole thing where he doesn't want to fight anybody and definitely doesn't want to kill anybody, but she's willing to do anything, and she does make him – she forces him to step over the line, essentially. She grabs him by the hand and forces him to pull the trigger. And so there was this little element of him kind of being sick because he obviously realized that she's completely different than him and that she is willing to do this and he doesn't want to do it. And she's very okay with that, and he cannot get over it. And then at some point, it does like a quick scene change, and suddenly it's got that whole kind of, I don't know, what was the old werewolf movie with Teenage Wolf? Kind of like a Teenage Wolf thing, where suddenly out of nowhere, everybody's like, oh, there's something different about you. And he's got that suave going on. He's lost his glasses, and he's suddenly really, really cool. The Spider-Man thing. And suddenly it technically does have a scene where he talks to one of his other classmates, which I'm totally seeing her getting a coin at some point. talking about one of the classmates, and he does have that kind of struggle, and he's kind of consoling with her. But it really quickly shifts away from that almost kind of that struggle, that mental struggle that he's completely tormented over. It just kind of jumps and leaves it behind, and then suddenly it turns into, okay, well, let's go find the sister, and they form a bond at that point, which I'm fine with, but it almost felt like, okay, well, you were doing something really kind of interesting here with the whole descent into madness, the I'm the forced murderer kind of thing, and then suddenly it's let's go find the coins. So yeah, it does have a very kind of hinted at dark tone. Like I said, it does get technically violent, even though I'm curious if in two more episodes, suddenly I don't know where we find out that it wasn't technically a murder. We'll see. But yeah, I'm kind of interested in the whole Kyubey kind of thing they've kind of presented. They have a very Kyubey-type character in the show that is almost toying with humans at the return that he's going to be able to get these coins of these things that he claims are kind of memory pods, so to speak. So it's been fascinating so far. I've been enjoying it. It's got a great directing to it so far. It looks good. So we'll see if it turns into something that actually has decent conclusion by the end. This is one of those ones that can very well really not conclude much, but we'll see going forward. And see if Chris drops it at some point. when the classmate that I claim is going to get a coin gets killed or something.
Yeah. Probably drop it like a
bag of bricks. Totally flagging the hill off Nana. I'm sorry. But yeah, it's Gluttner. Gal and Dino.
One that I did drop like a bag of bricks. I know.
Gal to Kyoryu. This one's Gal and Dino. Streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes. Being done by Studio Kamikaze Doga and Space Neko Company. The sources of manga and the genres are slice of life, comedy, and insane. I totally called this as being one that was going to turn into a short. And then we quickly realized why
it was 23
it didn't
minutes.
Have to be. Yeah, why it didn't have to be a short and how it actually turned into 23 minutes. Well, one thing they practice, and I think there was another show here a couple seasons ago that did the same thing. They do the whole thing where the first part of it's animated, and then they do like a bunch of little skits here and there, some clay animation skits, some goofy little things here and there, and then it does the entire story again with live action characters. Well, it was this in this case, it was in the first part, it's animated. It's a gal, which is Yaru, who is basically a girl that's kind of prettied up, and she's living with a dinosaur. Who is? It's totally out of Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, where it's like this whole I got drunk and suddenly I wake up and oh yeah, there's a dino that's living with me now. and then in the second part, in the second half, it's like some really old guy,
Salary
and
man.
He's waking up to the dinosaur living with him. So I quickly realized why they actually were managed to fill up that entire time. It's just goofy little skits and inserted jokes, and then this story that is repeated twice. So, it was fine in the whole animated segment. It was kind of funny and cute, but I couldn't really stand much of the rest of the stuff because it felt very. A lot of the little short moments were very. It felt like it was straight out of like Sesame Street.
Yeah,
like suddenly out of nowhere, there's the dinosaur and the cat show up and he runs away.
It's not stuff that you will learn anything from. No. It was stuff that
it just
It feels like goofy little things that to keep kids entertained, and that's about the best. I mean, I don't want to say this is a kid's show.
It's not. You it literally have a girl like that wakes up from a drunk state, and
yeah, that's true. and that's the thing is I guess
technically in Japan they're not as afraid of things like that. So,
but yeah, it's one of those shows that it was like. Nah, I'm not feeling this. Not that it did anything particularly bad. It's just I wasn't feeling it. And I did not bother to bug Andrew about it when he didn't click on it the second or third episode.
What about the second episode, Andrew? But it was one of those ones where I was almost tempted to watch that first segment of each episode. Like, would it be plausible to just watch the first 5 minutes where it does have technically just the regular standard animation? And then once it hits all that claymation and goofy stuff and the live action, just close it. I don't know. Because it was kind of cute and better than I thought it would be. But at the same time, everything outside of that was like, yeah, this is extremely boring. I did get a little chuckle out of the fact that she's like, what was it? He wanted the ramen. And so she's like, well, can you even eat ramen? You're a dinosaur. And then she Google searches and then she's like, no results? What the hell? It's like, yes, because dinosaurs don't exist, you dork. It was kind of goofy. I did like that. So, yeah, Gal and Dino. I would just watch the first part of it and then turn it off. That's pretty... I don't know. It might be something I'll do.
The cat thing was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Being afraid of the cats.
Not really.
No, I thought it was funny.
Shachibato, President, it's time for battle. Or Shachibato, battle no jikan desu. So streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes, being done by Studio C2C. Source is a game, and the genres are action, adventure, and fantasy. This one follows a guy named Minato, and at some point his childhood friend shows up out of nowhere named Yutoria. And Yutoria, he thinks that she's going to confess to him, but turns out she just really wants him to essentially become the new president of the Adventure Guild. I think they're called Adventure Guilds. They're guild. Because the previous guild leader has retired and left, and they need a new president, and she thinks that he is the perfect man for the job. And so, of course, technically Akari, Akira, who is another member of the team, doesn't really want him to be there, thinks that he's kind of very weak. I think he was like a 2-star. They do have ranks to everybody. I think it's technically because it's a gacha system. He's only a 2 rank, but... yeah, in this particular world, all these different guilds will eventually, you know, travel off and to do different quests that involve going into these doors that take them to different locations where they can defeat... What were they called?
I don't know.
Oh. Beast things. And destroy the beast things and then return home and make money off of different materials and stuff that they get there. So, yeah. Thoughts on Shachibato?
This show is kind of my opposite show. My opposite show. This one is actually one that I really, really kind of wanted to work and really enjoy, and it just hasn't. I like the characters. I enjoy the interactions that they have, but nothing else is really working. The story kind of sucks. They keep coming in with, like, one episode they were talking about an inheritance that they got, and they can't have the inheritance because they have to pay a deposit or some stupid crap like that. And it was like, okay, nothing has really worked. The last story was kind of cute. They were doing a little treasure hunt, and they kind of tied it in with their past and how it was set up to bring a friendship into fruition for another character that they had just met.
Yeah, the 12-year-old girl whose dad, her grandpa, was 120, so that means that technically that him and his son had to have been probably like 60 before they had children.
He was 60, and then his yeah, that sounds about right. So yeah, but it was cute, and the kind of tying it in with the childhood friend character was really kind of cute. But other than that, it's been kind of just it right there at the edge. And I guess, like I said, I really wanted to like this show.
I guess he technically could have been a great grandpa because I think they use the same terminology. I don't know.
Possible.
Yeah, he could have been a great grandpa. Either that, or he maybe found himself a nice young lady.
Then again, it could have been an uncle or something like that, because you know it's all the same term. Yeah, that's just true. Old
that's
man
true. That's true. There's some characters I enjoy. It's kind of one of those ones where I'm not really technically expecting much of the surrounding story or plot lines or anything like that. I thought the whole thing with Rivar and Valmy was kind of cute, and Akira's kind of rivalry with Rivar and how she can never remember his name. but it's not really doing too much outside of every now and then having a slight chuckle and some fun character personalities thrown in there. So yeah, it's kind of a throwaway show. I don't really expect really much out of this show whatsoever. So it's kind of like you mentioned the opposite. It's kind of like the opposite effect of something like Princess Redive Reconnect Thingamajiggy, where that one's doing something really great with the characters in the story. This one just doesn't seem to really be doing much, but showing off the characters and saying, oh yeah, by the way, here's Marika, and she's in the show, in the game. Fun. Yeah. Thumbs up. So yeah, Sachibato. Just a go out and adventure type show. Nothing really much there. Art. This one is streaming on Funimation, running for 12 episodes, being done by Studio 7 Arcs. The source is a manga. The genres are drama, historical, romance, seinen, and slice of life. And this one follows a girl named Arte, and she is the daughter of a noble family. But she doesn't really seem to care so much about being, I guess, what exactly her mother wants her to be, since her father has passed away. Her mother seems to want her to, you know, become elegant, presentable, do things that other girls would do at that time, which is essentially find a husband and marry them and be a proper woman. But she wants to do art. She doesn't really care about all that kind of stuff. She doesn't care about getting married. She just wants to draw. It was something that she had a huge bond with her father with. He always enjoyed her art. She just was just the thing that she wants to do. Funny that they named her Art and she doesn't want her to do art. she basically runs away from home and tries to find somebody to become her master and train her in the art of being an artist. And she goes everywhere and is completely locked out of everything and mocked and ridiculed because women do not do art in this particular time period. And so she eventually runs into a guy named Leo and is able to, even though he was technically trying to give her an impossible task in order to make her stop, she completed the task. And so he decided to allow her to be his apprentice. And so it's kind of their whole relationship building. Learning to draw. Well, not really learning to draw. She knows how to draw. But crafting her art and then the different things they run into. Doing jobs. Oh, yeah, I'm building a shack on top of a house. Thoughts?
You want to do this one first?
I don't care.
I've done every one of them first so far, I think.
Because I have to do the entire intro and everything.
This one... I'm really mixed on this one. I do enjoy it. So to get that out of the way, I think it looks great. I like the concept. And I feel like it's just on the cusp of just being the same through the entire show. It's not really pushing too much of anything. It just sits there right there. And it just constantly is telling this very a very every problem is the same problem. And that is the thing that bothers the crap out of me. That's exactly why I said that I was really, really hesitant about this. Because I see a problem that this show is going to be, and that is exactly what it's going to do. That is exactly what it's done, is the one problem that the entire premise of this show is about: a girl who wants to be an artist in a world that nobody wants a girl to be an artist. What do you think the entire show is about? It is about a girl doing things that girls are not supposed to do, and how she plunges her head, hard head, through everything. That's the premise of the show. That's exactly the thing that has happened through this entire show. Do I think that that is a bad thing? No, not really. Do I think it's a good thing? It's not doing anything but that.
It's spinning its wheels.
Yeah.
I'm of the same mind. It's one of those ones where, like, the opening episode is, okay, she's in the mole family, runs away, is told that she can't do that, meets Leo, hard-headed through a situation, breaks that situation. Everything about that is perfect. Like, she's thrown down, told she can't do something, and then she achieves it. And it's like, next episode, it's like, okay, let's repeat that again. She goes out to do something. They tell her she can't do it. She pushes through it. Okay, sure. Third episode, goes out, does something she's not supposed to be doing. Everybody chases her around because she did something that she wasn't supposed to be doing because she's a woman. Okay. And then the fourth episode technically did something different with the fourth episode. Well, I really did appreciate Veronica, the fourth episode.
Veronica was a fantastic story. I really, really like how that fit into it. But it's still technically the same thing. We're still talking about girls and what they're not supposed to be doing, and then them doing it and the kind of drama involved in that.
There was nothing in there that said girls can't do something. Well, it technically was girls. She was telling her, don't fall in love. But it wasn't a men coming in and saying, what are you doing, Veronica? You can't do this. No, Veronica did something that she felt was the way for her to be successful. And she found the way to do it. It didn't agree with art, but it was something that she found. It did something different with that fourth episode. And that was my whole point, is first episode, perfectly fine. Two and three is the same thing over and over again. And the fourth is like, okay, cool. This is something different. This is what I want you to do. I want you to advance these characters. I want you to show art. She obviously learned something from that whole situation. And because she essentially told Veronica not to do something. And then she's like, oh, wait, I'm essentially doing the same thing the guys tell me not to do, is be an artist. I'm telling you, I don't agree with what you're doing. It's the same situation. I think it's funny because it gets really kind of comical about it. I mean, we were laughing about the fact that at some point Leo takes Art off to like to see an autopsy, which is not allowed. But during this one festival, they're allowed to do it. And so he sneaks her in with her, like trying to dress her up like a man and go inside there just so that she can essentially see the anatomy of a human being. Because that's the only way they can really do it, is to see this one occasion where you can actually cut open a body and see what the insides look like. And it literally turns to the whole thing where these people are chasing them like they're criminals, and they're running up and down the alleys like, where are they at? We need to find them. Like, dude, these people would give up like 2 seconds later and go back to the autopsy. They're not going to chase them for 15 minutes to try to find them like they're going to arrest them or something. It was very comical about it. And I don't know, somebody could probably look up like, oh, but technically in these particular times, if doing that was against the law, and so the law enforcement would probably chase them down and arrest them. I don't know. It just felt very comical how, again, because we watched technically two episodes of the same scenario of your women not supposed to do that, go away, get in the kitchen, so to speak, without even saying that. So it's a frustration, because I think we mentioned in a preview of this, like, this could be a really fantastic story, or it can just not do anything. And I've only really gotten two stories in it so far that have been really solid out of. So you're two for two. This is the same thing over again, and two, okay, this is okay. So that's my struggle, is it has so much potential, and I think it's completely getting lost in the same story beat, which is Art, you're not supposed to do that. You're a woman. Art, you're not supposed to do that. You're a woman, which I'm fine with because technically that's a, that is reality at that, in that time period. But at the same time, do something with the characters. Make, tell me a story about this. Don't just tell me that it, that's how it was. Tell me a story. And it's not really doing that so far. So, art. Check that out if you, if you're interested. Wave, listen to me.
Oh,
my gosh. Nami, whoa. Kitekere. This one is streaming on Funimation, running for 12 episodes, being done by Studio Sunrise. The source is a manga. The genres are comedy, drama, romance, seinen. This one's creator is Hiroaki Samura, who, of course, did Blade of Immortal. Or Blade of the Immortal. And this one follows Minare. And Minare, she, late night one day, goes off to a bar, gets really drunk. Next day, goes to her job, being a waitress at a restaurant. And at some point, the radio on the restaurant starts playing an audio clip of her. Basically drunken self complaining about her ex, her ex-boyfriend. And she quickly realizes it's her voice, storms out of there, runs down to the local radio station and says, turn this dang thing off. And the guy in there, which was a guy at the bar with her the night before, says, sure, but you got to replace it with something because dead air is money. And so she agrees to go in there just to shut off the recording and essentially, yeah, rants on about her ex-boyfriend and screams about it and
rants about her boyfriend anyway.
No, I was the recording about something else.
I want to say the rant,
I think
was
the recording was something else. And I think the recording was about it. Maybe it was the same thing. I don't remember. I think she was complaining about some people that she didn't. I don't remember. Anyways, she, yeah, rants on about her boyfriend and says that she's gonna find him and kill him. And yeah, goes back to her life as working at a restaurant. Some point kind of talks with the radio guy again, and he kind of mentions the idea that he'd love to give her a job, but she got to find a sponsor. It's a 3 a.m. radio show. I think the first episode, we got a kind of a quick future glimpse of her kind of just telling random stories on the radio late at night about fighting off a bear while reading stories from people that they sent in, or questions rather. So you kind of get an idea of what she's eventually going to become. But I think we're kind of finally getting to the point where she's actually going to be doing that. and now 4 episodes in, we're finally getting to the point where she could possibly be in the radio station again. But a lot of focus lately in the last 2 episodes or so has been about, you know, her just trying to make ends meet while she's looking for another job. A little bit about her relationship with the guy that she works with, Chuya, and how much he desires to, you know, to have a relationship with her. And then some random inserted character that came out of nowhere after the restaurant manager gets in an accident. And that's kind of a new weird character that they've kind of inserted into the story. But, yeah. She's... Episode 5, we will finally get her on the radio station, which is the original story idea that we know we got initially. So it's a lot more slice of life than I was originally kind of thinking. I guess technically drama does kind of fit that element, but thoughts?
This show, we were saying it could go one of 2 ways, either stupidly funny or just be a huge flop. And so far right now, and I'm hoping it's mostly because we haven't really seen her on the air, it has been a huge flop for me. Any of the jokes that they've been playing so far have not landed with me at all. This has been absolutely boring as all get out for me. I wish it could do a lot better. I love the energy of the main character. She is absolutely vibrant and constantly on and on about something. But there's no entertainment factor. It's just blah 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 blah. Okay, and none of the jokes seems to land with me. I guess maybe that's just mostly what it is. It's just the jokes are not landing, and it might be the funniest show ever. But all I get is just her ranting and complaining about stupid things that I guess that could be funny, but it's not. The jokes are not landing with me at least.
It's kind of the same picture for me. As it's not that it's a bad show. It's just kind of a very It's a very non-happening drama show is really what it turned into. It's not really... Yeah, technically, I got a kind of a slight chuckle out of the whole story bit about a bear fighting her and how she was creating that character on the radio, but then she's in the studio and she's just, you know, huffing and puffing and trying to act out this fact that she's being attacked by a bear to the listeners. And I don't... Outside of that, yeah, I'm technically the same mind. It's like a lot of the rambling on is just I'm constantly looking through there trying to find a joke, and it's not there. It's just her rambling around and rambling, which is technically quite a bit of that aspect of being a radio person or even a podcaster, is just being able to just continuously speak, but you have to technically present something that's either funny or entertaining at the same time. And when she's not in that radio station and she's just out and about, she's just rambling. And that's just a kind of a, I'm constantly looking for something in there, just trying to find out if I'm missing a punchline at some point. I'm not missing the punchline. So really the only thing I'm really grabbing onto for the show itself is just kind of this small kind of story about her and Chuya and this random new chick that shows up in the restaurant and her struggling over the idea that she's going to have a job. Is she going to be able to pay the bills? Oh, okay, and this girl's allowed her to stay with her. Those kind of slice of life-ish elements is about all I'm getting. I'm not getting much from her rambling. I'm not getting much from her being a radio star besides, again, that first segment and possibly something in the future going forward. So I think episode five is going to be really telling, because they ended the episode four with literally, you got the job, your new show is Wave, listen to me. They literally dropped the title. I'm assuming we're going to get right into it next episode. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's not really doing much so far, and I'm hoping with this episodes going forward, they really kind of jump into it. Which is disappointing, because this was one of those shows that I wanted it to work. I mean, based off the PV, it was like, this girl is just going crazy. And they technically had that with her first kind of technically, quote-unquote, debut that she had. Was running in there and just ranting on. It was kind of like one of those, holy crap, that happened moments, but then where do you go from there? Was that the first volume? And then we got nothing after this point? I want it to work, because it feels more mature. It feels more adult. She seems like a character that could totally take off. But just four episodes so far, and we really haven't had much. So we'll see. Will you listen to me? Listeners is the next one. This was streaming on Funimation. Episodes running for 12 episodes. The studio is MAPPA. The source is original. The genres are action, sci-fi, music, mecha. The director is Hiroaki Ando, who did Ajin. Series composition by Dai Sato, who did Eureka 7 and Wolf's Rain. This follows a boy named Echoes, and he lives in kind of a, seems like a dump city. That has like just piles of trash there from some kind of cataclysm that happened, and he spends his days working with some other people, digging through trash to find objects to bring back to their mayor, who kind of trades him for money. And at some point, he finds a girl in the trash, and her name is Mew, or he technically gives her name Mew, based on this little kind of orb thing that he finds nearby where she was at. And Mew turns out to be what they call in this world a player. And player are people who can connect themselves to these amplifiers that turn into gigantic mechas, and they fight these beings known as Earless, which are gigantic, shadowy-looking creatures that look like mice with really big ears. Don't ask me why they're called Earless when they have big ears, but that's what they're called. And so they fight the Earless and destroy them, and then, yeah. So yeah, even though Echoes is kind of like, no, I like my life here, and Mew's kind of wants him to go along with her because, you know, she needs to leave and find her identity. They end up going together and traveling across the world again to find, namely, this person named Kimi Stonefree, who is kind of this person who is known as doing that catastrophe and causing damage, but is a player that is doesn't really have much reference to him, but he was a very popular player. And Echoes has like an almanac of all the players, and he's not even in that book. But yeah, just traveling each episode, they kind of run into a different player and have some music and fight and run some Earless, and then move on. Thoughts on listeners?
This is a show that I'm not really sure how I feel about it. I do kind of like the artwork. Most of the characters are very, very interesting. In particular, I really like Miyu's artwork. Some of the other characters kind of fit that mold. So, and there's a lot of different, very unique looking characters. That is one thing that I have really enjoyed about this show. The story is really weird. It's so all over the place.
It's like a musical revolution type story.
Yeah, they're trying for a kind
it's
of
almost
a,
like 60s setting. What is it? 60? Like Woodstockish?
Yeah, that's there as well. But then they throw in Team Spirit, which is, I guess, supposed to be the Nirvana, which is the 90s. So yeah. They're all over the place
it's different time.
The music. It feels like they're trying to do this weird mecha slash magical girl slash... I don't know. Eventually, I'm sure that they'll explain everything, but as it stands right now, the story is kind of just hit and miss for me. We're not really expounding on the main characters. We're just kind of exploring the world, and that's about as far as we're going so far right now. So take that for what it is. Like I said, I really do like the character artwork. I think that that's the one thing that... If I was to keep watching it, it'd probably be for that. Simply that alone.
I think that's the struggle. It's got a really kind of out there world that it's had so far, and I think that was the fascinating thing about me for me early on is that it feels very weird and out of place. Technically, I kind of joked about the fact the first episode was straight out of Battle Angel. It's like guy, you know, rummages through rubble from somewhere and finds a girl in there who ends up being one of these players and connects to her. You know, it felt very Battle Angel and how it opened up. So I wasn't really sure about that aspect, but like I said, it's a very weird world, but I think it's the only problem that I have so far is it feels very, not really technically episodic. It feels very, you know, two episodic, bi-episodic, double episodic. Every two episodes seems to be like a story, and it doesn't really have much going for it outside of that. Each of those stories are very quick, and at the very end of that episode, they get a breadcrumb for where to go next. They run into Billin. Billin's like, "When you get Miyu," they have a fight, and then at the very end, they go to this place because you'll find out more information. They go to that school. They go to the school. They run into Nier, and then they are looking for this information for Kimi. And then at the very end of that episode, they get their next breadcrumb and they go to the next location. So, I don't know. It's very adventurous in the idea that it's just kind of traveling and running to new locations and fighting either players or earless. But I agree with Chris. The characters are all very one note with each one of them. And that's probably going to be its biggest downfall in the end is that it has too many characters. It gives their one note and then they just kind of move on. But... yeah, I would agree. Interesting art style. Don't care so much about the CGI mechas, and especially having CGI characters stiffly standing on CGI mechas. The mechas doesn't look very good, and the battles aren't that great. But it's a weird world. I don't know. Crossange. There you go. That's my thoughts, is Crossange.
That's what I said. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this show. I really don't.
It's got good style. Mew is done by Megumin, and she does the songs for every ending episode, so that's interesting, too. Listeners, check it out if any of that makes any sense, because it's Crossange. Kakushigoto is the next one. This one is streaming on Funimation, running for 12 episodes. She is Aijia Do. The sources of manga, the genres are slice of life, comedy, and shonen. And the creator is Koji Kumeta, who did Sayonara Zetsubou Sensei and Joshi Raku. And this one follows a guy named Kakushi. And Kakushi, or as we call him, Goto-sensei. Goto-sensei is a mangaka who is decently popular. His particular manga that he does, but it's very kind of, I guess, adult and immature-ish, the manga that he does. So when his daughter Hime was born, as he was, you know, basically holding her in his hands, the nurses and everybody are like, "Oh, you're Goto Sensei, so you do that particular manga." And so ever since then, he's been kind of really extremely embarrassed about it, and has made a vow at that point that his daughter would never know that he drew that manga and that he's a mangaka. So it quickly jumps to her being a little older and now going to school and everything, and how he walks with her partway to school and then immediately runs to a location, gets chained into some very kind of casual clothes rather than a salaryman clothes, and then runs off to his studio where he actually draws manga instead of being a salaryman that his daughter thinks that he is. And so it's kind of a two-part story with this so far, technically three. The first is it kind of gives us brief little glimpse into the future where Hime is possibly discovering this. Then there's the segments where it's Goto as he's working as a mangaka and kind of a lot of jokes and references to what mangakas go through and the struggles they deal with and just superstitions about what different mangakas do. And then there's the last segment, which is when he's with Hime and he's just either trying to hide that he's a mangaka or just spending time with her. So it's kind of a three-parter. Technically, the two last ones are majority of it. Mostly a crazy comedy-type story. Every now and then, like I said, hitting on this kind of a possible serious note at the very... these little segments. But, Kakushi Goto, what do you think?
I really love this show. It's absolutely hitting all the notes that that we were hoping for, or that I was hoping for. Hime is absolutely adorable. Kakushi is absolutely a riot in a lot of situations. How he deals with different things, how inadvertently every woman in the entire world is falling for him. It is absolutely great. I love the way that they're playing this off. I love the kind of warm moments that they have between him and his daughter, and the kind of the hints. I don't want to say that I like the way that they're playing off the last bit where you kind of wonder where where they're leading on the end notes, if that's what's happening there and is that going to happen or not, or what is it. And so I like everything that they're doing in the show. It's all doing wonderful.
No sense.
I know.
I know what you're talking about, but I'm trying to think of it. Somebody listening to you, and I'm like, that made zero sense.
I don't want to imply what
they're hinting at something with the future segments.
And I like the way that they're dealing with it, but So I'll leave it at that.
It was funny because at some point Chris was talking about that future segment, and I'm like, the show seems like it's too much about mangakas. Like, I think that's my struggle, is that it almost has an identity crisis with the show. It seems like the creator of it was trying to go for a comedy about a mangaka. And they decided, well, let's throw in
let's add this a one lolly. Element.
Yeah, basically, let's throw a lolly in there. It'll be his daughter. And it'll be about him trying to hide it from his daughter. And then he's like, okay, well, let's start making jokes about mangakas. And then at some point, he gets like close to the end of the chapter, and somebody reminds him, hey, by the way, it's about him being a father. Okay, well, let me throw a quick segment in where he goes home and covers up one thing. And then the next episode, it's like right back in the thing. It's like, okay, he's at work and let's make jokes about mangakas. And then suddenly, I don't know where they go, by the way, it's supposed to be a father. Okay, let's throw a joke in there. Let's go over here and have him be a part of her, you know, camping trip and
stranger danger
and jumping in there and then running into the teacher. So it almost feels like it has an identity crisis because it spends so much time being a essentially a comedy about what mangakas go through, why they do certain things, the superstitions that they have, running from the editors, that kind of stuff. And then there's this other thing, which is, yeah, the very cute segments of him being a father, which he's a really good father, and I really enjoy those segments. So I don't know. I don't have any problem with the show whatsoever. I just think the segments where it's about mangaka jokes just goes on a little bit too long. And they're jokes that I've technically heard several times before. Like, these aren't... Yeah, there's a few of them, but I'm like, well, I wonder if that's true, because that's really weird. But for the most part, it's like, yeah, yes, yeah, we know that. That's a mangaka joke. We got it. All right, cool. It's just now Goto's doing it, so... That's really my only struggle. I get a huge kick out of it whenever it's like, yeah, the girl's going all falling for him. The segment where the guy gets caught and all three of them say something completely different. The CEO, the spirit, and what was it, the stalker or whatever? The stalker. It was a stalker because she's a wannabe idol. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy the characters a lot. Everything about it's great. Like I said, it's just, it seems like those little comedy bits about mangakas just seem to kind of go, oh, what are we doing with this? Okay, we're taking a little bit long here. I don't really care so much about mangaka jokes, so yeah. Good though. Very good. That's Kakushigoto. Good style to it too. Enjoy it. Even though it's technically not Shaft, and the Shaft version that they did for the OVA for the manga was technically a completely different style. But I do get a kick out of it every now and then, having those like overly exaggerated poses for Goto. And I'm like, that's totally Sayonara Zetsuba Sensei. So you do get that. If you enjoy Sayonara Zetsuba Sensei, it does have that kind of I'm in despair kind of look every now and then for Zetsuba. So, yep. Kakushigoto. Check it out. Bungo and Alchemist Gears of Judgment, or Bungo to Alchemist Shinpan no Haguruma. And this one's streaming on Funimation. It has been announced to be delayed, being done by Studio OLM. The source is a game, and the genres are adventure, action, and fantasy. And the series composition being done by Jun Kumagai, who did Shogun Goroku, Rakusenju, and Persona 4. I like how to throw this in here, even though it's technically delayed. I don't know how long it's being delayed for. Did watch the first episode. Felt very Grimm's Note-ish. You essentially have a character who is in his own story, and at some point he runs into a guy named Ryonosuke, who is another, technically an author, who kind of reveals to him that he is technically stuck in his own story, and that there is a creatures in it that are trying to corrupt the story by changing it to be more grim than what it technically is supposed to be about. And so he has to kind of finish the story properly and then fight the corruption that is causing the damage to the story. And then he's eventually teleported out to this big library where they meet a mascot character who tells them that he needs to go into these corrupted stories and save them. And it felt, like I said, it felt very Grimm's Note, but I think the only, even though Grimm's Note grabbed me really quickly, Grimm's Note was technically trying to change the story into something very fascinating and interesting, where this one was just kind of going, oh, we just threw like a bad guy at the very end of it that's forcing him to do something technically bad, but it doesn't really do anything clever with it. So it wasn't as fascinating that as Grimm's Note was for me, but it's Pretty Boys show. So if you like Pretty Boys, it's got Pretty Boys in it.
Yeah, it did okay. It was a weird concept. Unfortunately, I didn't understand, or I didn't know the story. I probably would have caught a lot more of the twists that I guess they were trying to do. It seemed like they were doing one thing, and I guess that's what it was, but I don't really know. Like I said, I don't know the story, so.
It was so funny, because the initial story, the one that the Dazai is a part of course, is a story about the guy who is about to be put to prison, and then a man comes forward and says, I will take, let him go see his, don't, before you execute him, let him go see his sister's wedding. She's about to be wed. And the king's like, no, he's going to be executed. If I let him go, he's going to run away. And he's like, well, then I will take his place. If he doesn't come back, you can execute me instead. And so the criminal goes to his sister's wedding, helps her with the wedding. And then when he's going to return, he realizes he's not going to make it in time and will cause the death of his friend. And of course, the corruption is that, oh, we don't realize that that guy was actually the one that betrayed to begin with. And that was the corruption that caused this one. But it was funny because, like, when they first mentioned the idea that he just left his sister's wedding, and it shows, like, a quick shot, and everybody's got, like, the same hair color, and it cuts to the guy, and he's got this bright, dark, blood-red hair, and I'm like, there's no way you're related to them whatsoever. They all have, like, blonde hair, and you have blood-red hair. There's no way you're related to them. I got a huge kick out of that. But then, like I said, I realized it. The very end of, oh, okay, he's actually the author injected into the story. Obviously, he's not the brother. He's himself injected into it. So, yeah, I kind of wanted to watch the second episode just to see, again, if it... Because I think I mentioned when I reviewed Grimm's Notes, I enjoyed the twisting of stories that we've known before. And technically, I agree with Chris. I know versions of that story particularly, but I didn't know that one from beginning to end specifically. So I was curious to see if there was other stories that I would actually understand or remember from anime stories.
It's one of those frustrating things that I really, it's almost like I feel like a necessary need to go and read these authors' stories because they reference them so often.
Well, that's like Bungo Stray Dogs.
Yeah.
There's a Daisai in that one. I technically probably would get a lot more enjoyment out of that particular show if I actually knew what each of the characters were based off of. So, yeah. Bungo and Alchemist. Check that one out if that sounds interesting to you. Shirouneko Project Zero Chronicles. Or Shirouneko Project Zero Chronicles is the Japanese version. Streaming on Funimation. Unknown amount of episodes are being going for. The studio is Project Number 9. The source is a game, and the genres are action, adventure, fantasy, and magic. And this one follows... Let's see where I start with this one. It's essentially in a world where there is two different plateaus. There is the area above the cloud, which is the area of light, which is all protected by the Queen of Light. And then there's the kind of under the cloud, this dark underbelly world where everything is run by a demon king of the king of darkness, so to speak. And they're at war with each other at all the times. And of course, everybody in between is kind of caught up in that battle. We follow quickly a boy that is in a village. And at some point, the village is attacked by beasts and they kill everybody in the village as he is trying to flee with the children of the village. And they all end up dying anyways. And he comes back to the village and just starts digging a huge hole in order to bury them. And a random guy named Skiers shows up and says, hey, what are you doing here? He's like, I'm digging a hole. Like, your village dead? Yep. Why are you doing that hole? And he's, I'm digging a hole. I'm just going to dig a hole. So anyways, it goes from him digging a hole to essentially fighting Skiers. And then Skiers croaks over and dies. Apparently he was already going to die anyways. And then he tells the boy to go to this one location and he will run into a guy named Valas, and Valas will essentially teach him how to become the next Demon King. And so he goes, okay, and goes there and runs into Valas and starts training to become the next king, king of the darkness. I keep wanting to say Demon King, King of Darkness. So yeah. Then it jumps to showing off the Land of the Light, which is kind of follows a girl named Arisu. And Arisu is constantly, kind of shows her backstory about how she always kind of struggles with what is a Queen of Light supposed to be, what is expected of her, can she do it? And then fighting this big demon thing called Baal, and yeah. Then it cuts back to the boy in the darkness area. He basically goes to a competition to gain this Shadow Blade to become the next King of Darkness because the King of Darkness has gone crazy and not helping his people, and his people are suffering. And then eventually he goes up to see Arisu and they try to form a pact to work together to fight Baal. Which has nothing to do with the stupid synopsis we talked about in the preview, by the way. let me read that.
No, you don't really have to, really.
No.
No, this is
fantastic.
You really don't have to.
Because I did that when we watched the first episode of that. I was like, afterwards I said, hey, Chris, come here. And I showed him it was even in the Funimation synopsis for the show. I'm like, read that synopsis. You remember that synopsis? Nothing to do with
what it's a
that
Romeo
said.
And Juliet story, okay, guys?
In a world consisting of numerous islands, a young hero from Astora Island encounters an adventurer, Kyle, and follows him on an expedition on the isle. They meet a mysterious girl named Idis and a talking white cat, and together they make their way to the isle's ruins, where they find a flying island. Kyle becomes consumed by darkness there, and the party resolves to travel to the ends of the world on the flying island in order to find 7 great runes, following Kyle's words before he disappeared. But yes, it's basically Romeo and Juliet. Star-crossed lovers, what do you want to call them? Thoughts?
I'm really... I am enjoying this show. I do wish that it had a bit more substance to it. Like we're saying, it's Romeo and Juliet. I mean, it really all comes down to that. I kind of wish it had, like I said, a bit more substance to it. Unfortunately, it just kind of just skates on the top of that thin ice of, we have these two competing factions and we need them to come together in some way, shape, or form. But really everybody in the light side hates all the darkness, and all the people in the darkness have to follow the great evil dark lord's orders because he's the great evil dark lord that controls everybody. So that's how it is.
Yeah. I'm not hating the show, but at the same time, I'm not really getting... I didn't like the first episode at all. Like, I joked about it. It was literally like village being destroyed, kids upset, starts digging a hole, guy shows up, they start fighting each other, and then he says, go become the Dark King Lord thing. And then he's like, okay. And then he runs off, and then it
forgets about his hole that he never finished digging.
It's like it was one of those kind of those ones that I always joke about with Kung Pao, where the guy tries to employ her to change his mind, to change her mind. It's like, okay. And it's like there's nothing that would nothing change the mind, but he said, okay, we're doing this. Okay, we're doing that now. But yeah, it's not really doing anything fascinating. It kind of looks rough every now and then. But at the same time, it's not boring. I guess I can give it that. It's kind
of—it's not the worst-looking show of the season.
It's got a constant pace that's moving forward and constantly showing something new to you. And it's kind of, even though it technically is a very cliche whole setup where it's the one side versus the other side, and the people in the middle just don't want to are sick of it. So. I kind of, we get a very clear perspective of the non-leadership side of the darkness, but we really haven't got much of the non-leadership side of the light, which is kind of unfortunate. We don't really get an idea. The darkness, obviously, the people don't like him. They don't like their leader because their leader is leaving them to die to beasts, whereas the light seems to have a control and order to what they're doing, so obviously there's a difference there. But,
because Idris is the queen of light.
Yeah. And they're taking care of their people.
Yeah.
Fighting off Baal, even though Baal tore up a lot of people. So yeah, I mean, it's not, it's got plenty there to go with it. I think I don't think it even has a name. It's just, they have Yami Aoji, which is the king of darkness. It's like, I don't even think he has a name to him. He doesn't seem like a very good character, but Aisu seems to have some things going for her, so that's, I guess, that is the struggles. The main characters don't have much going for them, but like I said, it keeps kind of moving forward the story, and it's constantly presenting the stuff, so hopefully there's something solid there. Groza was a blast. I thought she was cool. yeah, Shiro Neko Project, Zero Chronicles. I wasn't really expecting too much out of it, so maybe that's why I'm not disappointed.
And Team Rocket works for Groza.
Yeah, those dudes are special. Diary of Our Days at the Breakwater, or Hokkaku Taibo Nishi, which is streaming on Funimation, running for 12 episodes, but unfortunately this is another one that is set for delay. Don't know how long. Being done by Studio Dagokobo.
Aww.
Source is a manga, and the genres are slice of life, comedy, school, and seinen. This follows a girl named Hina who recently moves to a kind of a breakwater area out near the sea, and at some point she goes to school, ends up running into a childhood friend named Natsumi, and is roped into joining the fishing club, which they essentially fish and catch fish and cut the fish and eat the fish. And she wants to join a knitting school, so it's a little bit out of her comfort zone. But like I said, she ends up getting roped into it, and she seems to be enjoying it. I don't know. It ends every episode with her screaming, so I don't know. She's stepping out of her comfort zone. That's for sure.
The funny thing about this show is I look up at the studio and I see Dogokobo. How they're pulling this show off is beyond me. I was really ambivalent about it because every time we kind of go into these shows, we go, oh, it might be interesting to see moe girls doing whatever. Cute girls doing cute things on this particular
cute girls
thing.
Doing astrology.
Yeah. And
astronomy.
And this one, they're actually pulling it off for whatever daggum reason, at least for me. I love how Hina is absolutely, like Andrew was saying, stepping out of her comfort zone. Her pushing, even though she doesn't want to half the time, she does end up going ahead and doing it. And she has this revelation of every episode. She's getting a little bit better at these silly little things. And it's really fun. They're having goofy time trying to explain how this particular thing is, what they're catching in this particular section. It's actually really working for me. Strangely enough, I was not expecting that with this show.
Yeah, I think this show last season from Dogokobo kind of had me fearing for their kind of more cutesy shows. But this one's been a lot of fun so far. I wouldn't say that it's kind of doing anything that's spectacular. It's not always hitting the notes for all the comedy, but it's been fun enough and cute enough. I think it's got a solid cast to it, being, you know, Hina, who's more reserved but trying to break out of her comfort zone. Natsumi, who's more the Genki character. Yuki, who's more of kind of a, I just want to be lazy but does cool things every now and then. And Makoto, who I thought was going to be the weird stereotype big girl that I'd never like. Remember I'm trying to think of the name of the show. It was like Bakuan, I think it was. Was that the one with the bikes? It was a bike motorcycle show. And they had the one tall girl with the motorcycle helmet on all 24/7. I totally thought it was going to be the same character as her, but she's really sweet. Makoto's really sweet. I really like her character. It's got a great cast to go with it. And I'm kind of learning things new every now and then. I'm not used to overhead casting. So there are some funny aspects to that, like the whole upskirting with the hooks. It could have gone way worse than that.
It's so funny because I had so called it just before she did that cast. I said, you know, that hook is going somewhere. Went to a skirt, and I was like, totally didn't see it going to the skirt, but I did see it catching something.
You have a show about a girl learning to fish. It's going to have a hook going somewhere. But yeah, like I said, you should be glad not to be. Typically, it goes to worse places.
But skin, usually.
I'm talking skin. Ear, cheek.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Side of your eye, possibly.
Thumb.
But yeah, it is fun kind of learning a few things about it. Just, I think more of the aspect, I've done a little bit of fishing, but I've never really got into learning about specific routine or specific ways of catching like so many different types of fish. And I think that's one of the cooler aspects of it. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but it looks believable, so I'm going with it. It's a lot of fun in that regard. So it's kind of this mixture of it is essentially cute girls doing cute things, which is typically here's cute girls and here's a thing. And it's been fascinating in that regard with those things. So that's all I really asked for. Again, with the Asteroid in Love, it was cute girls, but the thing wasn't really well done, in my opinion, so I didn't really get into it that well. This is doing both sides well. So yeah, it's another good, solid Dokubo. Hopefully they, again, this is, again, it's the, I want them to be safe, so if they need to delay longer, but would enjoy seeing more of it, so we'll see. We'll see how long it delays for. Really cute, though. Yeah, I do definitely enjoy Hina's breaking out of her shell. I do kind of see her being a little over top sometimes, especially with trying to knife a fish. That was fun, though. Just a solid cast. I really do enjoy them, so good stuff. Cute girls doing cute things done right. Diaries of Our Day at the Breakwater. Terrible name, though. Tamayomi, the Baseball Girls, or the Japanese title is just Tamayomi. This one is streaming on Funimation, going for 12 episodes, being done by Studio A-Cat. The source is a manga, and the genres are sports and school. And this follows a girl named Yomi, who in her past has played baseball in middle school. Didn't go so well. She had a mean killer curveball, but unfortunately her catcher could never catch it. But thankfully, when she gets to her next grade and she runs into a girl named Tamaki, who was from her childhood, who was a friend that actually could catch that ball. So it's re-sparked her interest in baseball, and she can now pitch the crazy curveball that only Tamaki can catch. And together, them as a battery will take on the world. But first, they get new members, all these different... You have the usual... There's the seniors that come in and they all go, no, we can't join because terrible things happened in the past. And then Genki has to tell them, no, you come to play. And they go, okay, never mind. It wasn't that bad, I guess.
Okay.
And then you have the characters who come in and go, no, these kids are having too much fun. I only want to join a baseball club that takes it serious. But then the Genki character comes up and says, hey, come play with us. And he goes, okay, let's have fun.
Okay.
And then you have like the, I used to do kendo and I could never do baseball even though I wanted to. But mama said if I did it all the way to the end, she would let me play. And she gets joined to go up too. And then
the grumpy girl decides they're not taking it serious enough. And so
a senior. Yeah.
She was a senior.
Yeah.
She was a lefty. That's all I care about.
So, yeah. It was funny, yeah, because the whole... Always have to have the... But the previous... It was shut down because the previous year, there was this big scandal, and you're like, holy crap, somebody died. And it's like, no, they were just really mean, and pushed them way hard, and were kind of abusive, and it's like, okay, but that was last year.
Kind of abusive, like... What do you mean, kind of abusive? They were,
hanging
people by their toes.
I mean, hitting them with, like, sticks and saying, keep pushing up. I don't know.
Wiffle bats. I mean, what was the really big scandal?
Battery again? That show? That would be a scandal? But, yeah.
I love how they overplay those hands. I mean, come on, guys.
And I knew it. The moment they said, they walked up and they said, let's go. And they're like, was that the seniors that used to be in the club? I'm like, oh, here we go. Oh, there's going to be some. If somebody didn't die, I'm going to be mad.
I don't want to hear
Nobody it. Died. Stop acting like if you walk out of that field, somebody's going to die again. It's always overplayed. But yeah, they go off and play their first team. And then that's kind of where we're at.
Okay. As I made the joke of earlier, that wasn't the worst looking show. This one absolutely is. This is
rough.
This show has had a rough four episodes, and we're talking off models. We're talking CGI's just god awful. I mean, characters look. Characters look like they've gained 50 pounds in half a second.
They're so chunky when they're in CGI. Chunky.
I do acknowledge what they're trying to do and what they're doing is not the same thing. They're trying for athletic build of baseball girls, if you want to call it that. And it's not that it looks heavy. It looks thicker because the muscles are a lot more solid. And it's not dainty like a lot of most anime shows.
Like their actual character designs.
Yeah, their actual character designs are dainty, you know, anime moe girls. And it's not working, especially when you go from one character to a CGI built off of an athletic person. And it's not working at all. And so, like I said, this show is their artwork is just all over the place. It looks horrible. It's very...
That's the more frustrating thing is that they're so off model half the time. I don't recognize anybody besides maybe Yomi and Tamaki.
Usually you go, who's that? And then you have to look up at their hair and you kind of get a rough idea.
Is one of the tails wagging? Okay, it's Yoshino. Okay. Are they wearing the catcher's mask? Oh, that's Tamaki. Does she have the braid thing in her hair? Okay, that's Nozomi. You have to look for like distinct things like in their hair or color. Okay, that might be Risa or Rei. Not sure. Wait, he has a fang. Has to be Ryo. Because Ryo is the one that always has the fang.
But yeah, it's frustrating as far as the artwork. The storyline is kind of sweet and cute and going for the kind of baseball team. And you kind of want to see where they're going to go, how well they're going to do. But it is very, very borderline. That's what they're going for is just the baseball team going and making it to the Nationals.
Yeah, so far it's been very cliche because it's doing the it did the previous year had something bad happened and don't want to continue it. And then you have the
I just want to bring pretend people that in. Never happened.
But there's the whole it technically for what we watched so far, which four episodes, it's been pretty much the whole typical cliche have fun versus actually trying hard and being serious about it thing and trying to find that middle ground of you can still have fun while you train really hard and learn. The only promising thing that they presented me so far was at the very end of the fourth episode, they kind of hinted at somebody failing at something that they felt like they were the only thing that they themselves could do that nobody else could do. And that could turn into something cool. Doubt it. Just because the four episodes have not really presented anything to me that says that this is going to get really deep dive into anything. It's just cute girls playing baseball with some very failed attempt at having some heavy drama mixed in here and there. So, but its big issue is that, and I kind of expected it. It was a new studio. I fully expected they weren't going to pull it off. I think I even mentioned in the preview it was showing some wonkiness to it. And usually when the preview doesn't present, you know, stellar animation from beginning to end on a 1 minute at the most trailer, that usually is a bad sign because they usually put the best of the best in that PV. So it's not doing anything bad. So don't get me wrong. It's just I think the only thing that it is doing really badly is I cannot stand the CGI models. They are just absolutely horrible looking. And I've something like Big Windup did perfectly well in this. And so I would like another Big Windup show with cute girls. That'd be fine. It's just not doing it. Maybe I should check out that Major Second, because that one's got plenty of cute girls in that team. I think there's only one, two boys in that show. So maybe that's the Tama Yomi I need to watch. But that one's delayed too, so there you go. Kaguya-sama Love is War, second season, or Kaguya-sama wa Kokurasetai Tensai Tachi no Renai Zunosen. This one is streaming on Funimation, running for 12 episodes. Studio is A1 Pictures. the source is a manga, and the comedy, or the genres are comedy, psychological, romance, school, seinen, horror, drama, fantasy. I'm joking. It was only like three of those. But yes, this one follows two characters, Kaguya and Miyuki, and they are, Miyuki is the school president, or student council president, and Kaguya is the vice student council president, and they are in love with each other, but they don't want to admit it, because they want the other person to confess, and so they are constantly at battle with each other to try to get the other person to confess, or I guess break them so that they can slip up, and then the other members play into it as well. So, thoughts on the second season so far?
We had a little bit of a rough first episode, but we got right on into it in the second episode and on. This show has been an absolute blast. I get a kick out of how much I missed it. It just, there's so many goofy things that they have. We've got, Kaguya just absolutely being destroyed in one episode. We had Miyuki getting
blown
destroyed
up in like two episodes.
Yeah, she. I mean, it's just we're going full bore now. I still love the concept of the two tops going to battle for who's going to make the actual get the confession. It's so much fun. I can't suggest this enough. If you have not watched the first season and you're listening to our take on the second season, why have you not went back and watched this show? It is too much fun.
It's funny because I remember in the first season, I wasn't really sure about the whole narration thing with it, but it just works so well. It's every single one of these skits having the narrator come on and say who won in the very end. It was funny because it was one of them that I was like, I think Miyuki won on every single one of these, and then Chris is like, "No, Kaguya won on the moon viewing part." And I'm like, "That doesn't make any sense because Miyuki like broke her bad." And I'm like, "Oh, because Kaguya got exactly what she wanted, even though she broke, and he was completely oblivious to the entire thing, so he lost." It was really cute. I do really enjoy that whole element of like. Technically, and you don't really feel it so much each time there's an actual skit going on, but technically every single one of them is a battle, and at the very end there's always like this determination on which one of the two technically won in that battle, but you're just kind of going along with it and seeing all these goofiness that are kind of happening. But just seeing her being blown up on a pretty regular basis right now is a lot of fun, because her reaction to her essentially getting what she wants, but totally not being able to handle it, is always fantastic. But yeah, I do agree that first episode, it wasn't terrible, but it was one of those where it was like, oh no, don't tell me they're losing it. Because the second season on comedies are always scary, because you're always afraid they're going to be losing their steam. Granted, most comedies, you'll know by the third episode if the first volume manga was the punchline and the rest of it was terrible. But when you have a consistently great first season, there's always the fear that by the second season, they've used all the best material in the first one, and the second season is going to be where it finally drops. But it's still not dropping. It's still doing a solid job. So, great stuff. Great stuff. Definitely go watch it. Kaguya-sama, Love is War, second season. Good stuff. The Millionaire Detective, Balance Unlimited.
Balance Unlimited.
Or Fugo Keiji Balance Unlimited. They have to say it every episode.
Balance Unlimited.
Funimation is streaming this. It's running for 11 episodes, but unfortunately this is one that has been delayed to July. So they will restart it up in July, but figure get our impressions now. Being done by Studio Cloverworks. The source is a novel. The genres are mystery, comedy, and police. The creator of the novel is Yatsutaka Tsutsui, who did Paprika and Girl Who Leapt Through Time. The director is Tomohiko Ito, who of course did Erased and Silver Spoon, as well as Sword Online Season 2. And the series composition and scriptwriter was Taku Kishimoto, who did Erased, 91 Days, Silver Spoon, Haikyuu, and Usagi Drop. So solid people working on it. This one follows a guy named Haru, who works for the modern division. We've technically only watched two episodes, and so it's been quite a long time since we've seen an episode. But I'll try to give this as best as I can. Haru is a part of the modern detectives, a modern division of detectives or something like that. It's part of the police department, follows modern cases or something like that. But anyways, at some point, he is working a job, ends up running into a guy named Daisuke, who is essentially a millionaire, or I'd probably say a billionaire. I don't really know where his status is at. He just has a unlimited bank account that he can pay whatever he wants to get the job done. And Daisuke seems to have a desire to fight crime and is willing to pay off anybody and everything in his way. So if there is a, you know, old school car parade going through town, he'll just drive through them all with his expensive car and just pay for everybody's damaged vehicles because he needs to get to the enemy who's ahead of them. If he wants to take down a criminal cell inside of a building, he'll buy the building so that he can shoot bullets into it. Again, balance unlimited, everything gets paid off, and it always shows like a little summary at the end of every episode to kind of show how much he's spending just to take down the criminals. But anyways, Haru goes back to his work after this first case and finds that he has been assigned to be a partner of, or he's been assigned a partner, which is ends up being big shock Daisuke. And so you have basically a guy who wants to do everything by the book, doesn't really feel like, doesn't really like somebody who is willing to throw money at everything, feels that connections are better than money. And then you have Daisuke, who's just willing to throw money at people just to get confessions or information out of them. And yeah, so to speak. So you kind of have that dynamic going on between the two of them as they try to really, again, we've only had two episodes. Second one's kind of cute. Had like this two people that were just trying to rob us. They robbed us a bakery store. End up running into a getaway vehicle. They end up having a bomb in it. And then again, Daisuke trying to end it his own way, or how he was trying to end it in his own way. So thoughts?
I actually kind of liked this show. I do kind of like Daisuke. I think he is a really he's kind of that cool-headed guy that just kind of goes into each situation and figures it out really quickly. And the way he solves most problems, like Andrew said, is just throw money at it. He wants to buy a car off the side of the road instead of actually confiscating it. He's okay.
He's like, oh, I'm going to buy this.
Buy this.
Yeah, right. $5 trillion. Give me $5 million. And then you're going, okay. Balance unlimited.
And so that's how he solves it. And literally, I don't think he had a problem yet that he hasn't solved in some way, shape, or form with money.
Yeah, they were trying to get information out of people, and so you had two different interrogation rooms.
Name your price.
And one, he's like, you want a bunch of money? Tell me how much money. And the guy's like, no, I'm going to sell him out. And by the end, he leaves, and the guy's like, oh my gosh,
he really account. Is in here. So, yeah, I do really like Daisuke. He's a really cool guy. I do like the concept of Haru, the straight-laced guy who has a heart for doing things the right way, a heart for taking care of people, and the fact that and having Daisuke there is kind of something that rubs him the wrong way in every way, shape, and form, because you cannot solve everything with money. And I love the idea of the concept of these two heads clashing. The problem is their chemistry is not there at all.
No.
In any way, shape, or form. And that's the biggest flaw.
Because Daisuke doesn't conflict. That's the thing.
Didn't he give Haru money at some point, or offer money to Haru at some point?
Yeah, because he was, when he first got assigned, and he's like, I ain't going to have this. And Daisuke's like, okay, well, name your price. He essentially said that. He's like, well, let's pay. What do you want? Like, how much do you want? And that, ticked Haru off even more.
It should work. Unfortunately, for some odd reason, at least in the first two episodes, they're not working right now. Maybe later on they might figure the chemistry might start evening out a little bit better, but as it stands right now, it's just not working. But other than that, I love the concept. I'm absolutely get a kick out of the big O numbers at the end. I wish that they would Funimation would actually break down what it is that's in those numbers.
Yeah, we're always kind of guessing, like, yeah, that was definitely
that the building.
That was definitely the car right there. Yeah, so it's kind of technically a fun little game that we sit there and try to figure out what exactly is in the list. I am in the same mind. I love Daisuke. I think he is so awesome. He's like, he's very sure of himself. He never conflicts. That's the thing, because I mentioned to Chris after the second episode. I said I love everything about the show: the visual style, the setting, the goofy stories that kind of get put into the mix of the crimes.
It just gets more and more over the top as the money gets thrown around.
Yeah, like I mentioned, we technically have only had like one actual full episode of a crime being solved, and that was really the whole thing of Yoko and Hiroshi, who were just got caught up in the actual crime that was happening, which was this bomb that was set up to blow up. And so it was a lot of fun having like this, what the bad guy's side was doing, and then here's Haru and Daisuke trying to figure out in their own separate ways. But I joke with Chris, was like, the only problem I have right now is that I came into this expecting that there was going to be like this really interesting chemistry, the buddy cop chemistry, where there's two cops and they all have two different sides of how they see things, and they're butting heads all the time while trying to take down a bad guy. Whereas this one, it's only Haru who has any issues. He's just constantly upset about how Daisuke handles things. And Daisuke's just like, well, let's go through this. All right, I handled this. Let's move on. He never turns around and says, Haru, no, I'm doing perfectly fine. No, Haru, we're going to do it this way. He never says that. He always just goes, hey, Haru, where are you going? Let me help with you. Okay, well, I'm handling it this way. He never really tells Haru no or tells Haru what to do. He just does it on the side with his little super duper, Apple Pay glasses that's just sending money at people's credit cards through touching his glasses, which is like super technology. His technology, he's like the Batman of how to pay money. He's got like this super advanced technology to pay people through his glasses. Maybe it's Google Glass or something. I don't know. But yeah, I love the character so far, except for Haru, which I'm hoping something with their chemistry figures out eventually, but everything else about the show is fantastic. I think my only issue right now is Haru, which I'm assuming eventually they're going to run into a situation where Daisuke can't pay through a wall, and then Haru is going to show him how to pull the bricks out of the wall. I don't know. But yeah, it's been great so far. Phenomenally
done. He's
going
to go, Daisuke, you need to pay these people. He's like, I can't. There's a wall here. Oh, just kick the stupid wall down.
No, he's going to fall. He's going to trip. He's going to break his glasses. And Daisuke's going to go, my money transferring ability. I can't function anymore. My credit card's gone. And Daisuke's going, it's okay, Daisuke. We'll find you an ATM.
An ATM.
And you can use a credit card.
What the heck is that?
I don't have a credit card. Calm down, Daisuke. We'll find a bank. It's overseas. Calm down, Daisuke. We'll find a web browser. I don't know how to function that. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. That's going to be the big breakthrough, is Daisuke breaking his glasses and Haru having to show him other ways of transferring funds. He's going to have to bring him to a Western Union. And that'll be a whole episode, is a Western Union and how to handle transferring funds. Anyways, that's
and then Western Union sends the cops out because he's transferring too much money.
Yeah, the Millionaire Detective Balance Unlimited. Hopefully, again, they stay safe, but at the same time, kind of sucks having to wait to July. But we'll live. Apare Ranman. This one is streaming on Funimation. Unknown amount of episodes running for. This one is another one that has been confirmed to be delayed. Do not know how long. It has not been confirmed to be delayed till next season. This is being done by Studio PA Works. The source is original, and the genres are comedy and historical. This one follows a guy named Kosami, who Kosami is technically given... He's forced to have to take care of a guy named Apare, who is the son of a family that he's supposed to be taking care of. He ends up breaking into some location and causing damage, which ends him up in jail. And Apare ends up breaking out of jail because he's kind of a super genius guy, a little bit weird. And Kosame, because he was assigned the duty of taking care of Apare, feels like he is going to be receiving the same penalties that Apare is doing because he broke out of jail. So he's trying to talk him into going back to jail. And Apare ends up saying, no, I'm leaving. And he gets into this kind of weird, crazy ship concoction thing that he built and running off into the ocean with Kasami in tow. And they end up essentially stuck in the middle of the ocean and then eventually picked up by a boat and taken to America. And at America, they end up discovering there's this big race there that's across the entire country because it's kind of still the Wild West sort of era. Still, you know, just getting into vehicles and stuff. And so there's this big competition to go across the entire country. And Apare has kind of decided that he wants to do that. So, and Kasami agrees because that's the only way they can get the money in order for him to be able to get back to Japan. So he's, again, kind of in tow. And then you kind of run into different characters that seem to be obviously different racers that will end up being in this big, crazy Hanna-Barbera race across the country in crazy vehicles type show. Thoughts?
I am ambivalent of this show. I like the character art.
Apare is a dude, and he's mad.
I don't like Apare. Apare is
the moment Apare
annoying.
Opened his mouth. Chris is like, "Oh damn!" like I literally felt I heard in coming out of his ear, like his mind shatter and his heart break. The instant
that bad.
Apare
Come on.
Opened his mouth because a dude's voice came out of it, and it was like. Oh, it's a guy. Crap!
I did say it's a guy. I did that. It was a kind
like,
of a shock.
Literally, the only chick in the show is Jing, and she's not even part of the main cast. It's like it's all dudes.
Well, no, the new guy had a chick, but and she got the two wheeler. But she's not a main.
Yeah, she stole his segue. totally stole his segue. That was cute.
Like I said, I'm ambivalent of the show. It's, I kind of like the characters, but they're unfortunately it's not. I don't think that we've gotten far enough in to really see where they're really all headed outside of to get to this big race. Okay, the big race is coming. Okay, yeah, well, I get that. The big race is coming. And everybody's talking about the big freaking race. Okay, let's do the race already. And that's really where I am right now. I'm just frustrated because we keep talking about
that.
The big race.
I'm actually fine with how they're doing this because it's technically allowing us to kind of meet each and one of these racers because, again, I kind of mentioned before, the moment they get in their race cars, unless they have checkpoints they're forced to go to, there should be a gap between them pretty quickly that they wouldn't have much interaction. I know they're going to force interaction with each other once the race starts, but it really does feel like you kind of need to get through the characters and learn the characters before you actually get to racing.
Well, we're
unless
talking
you don't care about the characters
at the moment right now. I mean, if the race is a couple thousand miles.
Oh, you know, it ain't going to be actual to time.
Okay, but still, I mean, you're still
not going to have a 40-hour race.
Well, my main point is even I mean, you're going to be dragging that out as long as they're going to try and drag that out. I mean, we're talking at least a shonen type series going on right now. Is the way it's feeling.
Well, and that's the weird thing cuz PA Works is very much known for doing 24 with all their originals. I mean, the recent ones anyways. I mean, yeah, technically you go back as far as something like True Tears or something like that, you're going to get shows that have like a single core, but for the most part, all their originals, they're always pushing to Fairy Gone, Sirius the Jaeger, Sakura Quest, Hanasaki Roha. They're all technically two core stuff. So I kind of feel like this will probably be another two-core one, but again, you're kind of throwing it out the door because of the fact that it's delayed. We don't even know when it'll actually start or when it will actually or if the fact that it's delayed is going to cost them what they wanted to originally do for their run length because it's technically original. They may have to shift it in order to meet the schedule. So hopefully that doesn't ruin the show because I actually do enjoy the show. I do enjoy the cast. It was a little bit rough for the first episode. I really wasn't sure if I was going to enjoy the characters because I technically liked the chemistry between Kasame and Apate, but at the same time, I wasn't really sure I was going to get much entertainment out of them in general because of how quiet Apate was and how over the top Kasame was. But as they started introducing other characters, Hototo, Jing, Ao, I actually really did enjoy the cast, and I feel like it could. And whenever it does kind of ramp up to having like a race or something silly happening, and it kicks in some really goofy, almost kind of, saxophone, weird type music in the mix with like some violin and stuff, it really does sound fun, energetic. You know, Kasame getting launched in the middle of the race was a lot of fun. I can see the potential of it because when it does get ramped up, it gets almost that over-the-top silliness partnership between the two of them. It feels fun. So can they keep pulling that off? Can it turn into an interesting story? Will the racing be fun even though they're using crappy CGI? I don't know. But I am kind of interested. I thought I wasn't going to be, and it's been entertaining so far. That it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. People have heard our review of Fruits Basket. I don't think we really need to get into Fruits Basket quite yet. And we really haven't been keeping up on Plunderer. Hopefully we can get back to that one. Unless it gets canceled. So we're done. That's it for our first impressions of the spring 2020 anime season. Again, hopefully. Well, again, we hope they keep safe. But at the same time, hopefully we'll have at least some of these continue on. Otherwise, we will find other things to do to fill that gap. But until then, at least you'll have our first impressions for future sakes. So maybe if these all end up continuing on in the summer season, you can just listen to this podcast and go, oh yeah, we did like that show. So I hope you guys enjoyed our run through of the spring 2020 season. There's a few of them in there. We do definitely enjoying seeing A Sin of a Bookworm continue. Really am enjoying the Yesterday to me. But it sucks because it is technically a season where two of my most anticipated end up being delayed, but it still has some good stuff in there. But yeah.
Yeah. I'm having a lot of fun with a lot of the shows this season.
Just how many of them are continuing?
I don't know. I have no clue. I have not been keeping up on the list. I don't want to know which ones are going to...
I literally said to each other that you went through there. I told all the ones that delayed.
I know you did.
Okay.
And it's none of the ones that I'm excited about right now, so...
Oh, you're not excited about Balance on the
Beach? I don't want to know. I told you I'm not paying attention to which ones are not following me. Why don't you...
Breakwater? I thought you liked Breakwater.
I do like Breakwater. Thank you for telling me another one that's not going to... I'm obviously not paying attention to it. So, see, I don't want to know.
I think the ones that we talked
about... Let me be surprised.
Balance Unlimited, Breakwater, and not Potter Ranman. Anyways, hope you guys enjoyed this run-through of the first impressions for Spring 2020. Again, we're at otakuspirit.com. You can go there for all of our anime, new and old, great community, formerly Stop, social media links, the right side, and all that good stuff. And we hope you all enjoyed, and you all take care.
Oos!思い出の中を会えない時が私は少し迷わせる儚い光あなたの暗闇風